nothing. Rock!
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
Rock!
Look out. What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
Listen to me.
Rock!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Fat! Delete!
You haven't been beat up properly!
Woo!
It is Great Balls of Fire Sunday, July 9th, 2017, and this is episode 503. Of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. I am the Solid Monster. We will have great balls of fire predictions. And by the way, it still sounds every bit as ridiculous saying that now as it did when we first found out what the name of this pay-per-view was. You don't really get used to it, I don't think. But we'll talk about great balls of fire. We'll talk about what happened on Friday. What didn't happen on Friday? There was a lot of stuff that went down. kind of blew up my rundown here. So we got a lot to get to. So let's get our business, our little business out of the way here first. In case you were not aware, there is a sale ongoing in our store on prowrestlingtees.com/solidmonstersoundsoff until 12 noon tomorrow. This Monday, July 10th. I don't know when you guys are listening to this. Some listen to it right away, and some of you listen to it over the course of the week. But if you are listening to this, and you still have time, take advantage of it. 20% off everything in our store when you use the promo code AMERICA at checkout. That is until noon Eastern on Monday. So as I record this, only a little more than 24 hours left. But definitely take advantage. We have over 24 shirts in the store. If you're looking for a discount, 20% off. Use the code AMERICA and get yourself a Sound Off shirt. You could also use our Audible link if you want to get the new Justin Roberts audiobook, Best Seat in the House, Your Backstage Pass Through My WWE Journey, narrated by Justin himself. Over 11 hours, I believe, of audio. Use our link, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. Get yourself a free book. Even if you cancel your trial within the 30 days before it's up, you will not be billed, and you get to keep your free book. It's a free book from me to you. So take advantage of that. The Justin Roberts book, I cannot recommend it enough. I'm going to talk more about that book in the next few weeks here, but if you've not read it, if you have not listened to it, now's your chance. Take advantage. audibletrial.com/solidmonster. Also want to say thank you to everybody who made a PayPal donation this week. You guys are the lifeblood here of this show. I appreciate the hell out of you. $10 or more will always get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on this show, which goes all over the world. It's pretty cool. You can have your name read in Mozambique. I don't know how many Sound Off listeners we have in Mozambique. I know we have one. I know I heard from not too long ago in Uganda. We have a few in South Africa. We have some all over the continent, in fact. So anyway, if you want to get yourself a shout-out, $10 or more, we'll get you the nickname. $30 or more, we'll get you a shout-out as well for your podcast or YouTube channel or business or what have you. Just email me the details and we'll talk about it. But I want to say thank you very much to John Loose Cannon Lopez. We have Deadpool James Herrera, as always. Yvonne Bruiser Balick. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. The Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra. Luis Hercules Hernandez. Mass Grave Micah Harshaw. Killshot Keith Hart. Ladies Man Levi Daly. Velvet Revolver Robert Murray. Lionheart Michael Paez. Raymond the Mountie Medina, the Prince of Pleasantville, Emilio Crockett, the Brooklyn Bombers, Jamel and Isaiah Walker, Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, Mentally Unstable Matt Cotter, the Main Attraction, Jackson Scott, the Mississauga Missionary, Steve Kenny, Better Than Raw, Robert Michalshek, Max the Axe Velado, Stephen Handyman Halistic, the Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel Te? I hope I'm pronouncing that last name right. Joseph Fratboy Burrow. I want to say also happy birthday to Old Garbage. Shane Maniachi. Man, That's not, I did not come up with that name, by the way. I would not do such a thing. But that's the name that Shane wanted, so happy birthday to him. The Punxsutawney Pitbull, Clay Farah, the DC Slayer, Marcus Cross. I also want to give a shout out to the professor, Chris Markington. You can check out his podcast, Live at 8:30. And that is not the time, that's the name of the show, Live at 8:30, with his co-host, Dr. Raul K. Fabi. K. Fabi. Check him out. Live at 830.com is the website address. Also, thank you very much to Andraz Menhart. And a big, big thank you to the Belgian brute, Nicholas Overmeer. I cannot put into words how nice that was of you. Thank you very much. We got a rare title change at a house show on Friday night in Madison Square Garden. WWE does not run the Garden much anymore. They usually run Barclays a lot more, but when they do, they try to make it special, and this was no exception. The WWE title once changed hands, as I'm sure many of you remember, in 8 seconds at an MSG house show when Diesel pinned Bob Backlund. Just last year, Samoa Joe pinned Finn Balor at a house show in Lowell, Massachusetts to win the NXT championship. Friday night, WWE ran a Raw house show at MSG, but they added some SmackDown talent to the card. So again, LOL, brand split. But they added a SmackDown match to the card, United States Championship match with Kevin Owens defending against AJ Styles. And with a phenomenal forearm, he actually kicked out of the Styles clash, but with a phenomenal forearm, clean in the middle of the ring, AJ Styles pinned Kevin Owens just days after winning a Battle Royal on SmackDown to earn a title shot at the Battleground pay-per-view in 2 weeks. And so AJ Styles is the new United States champion. And I gotta say, I love it. I love it. It makes me regret not going to the show. So mission accomplished, right? That's kind of the point. That's exactly why I think it's smart to do that sort of thing every now and then. And it's something I just got done talking about not more than a few weeks ago here on this podcast. You know, I answered a mailbag question about doing a somebody wanted to know my thoughts on them doing a Money in the Bank cash-in at a house show once, and I think that would be a bad idea. But in talking about it, I said, you know what? It would be fine to do a U.S. title change or an Intercontinental or a Cruiserweight title change on a house show. I just talked about this a few weeks ago. What was it? Episode 499, I think it was. I have no problem with it not being on TV or on the network. Although I would be in favor of them doing some house show specials on the network from time to time. But you know, I saw some people upset that, oh, why wasn't this on the network? Because it wasn't meant to be. It wouldn't have people talking the way that it does if it had aired on TV. Right? It got people talking, which is exactly what WWE needs right now. They need to do stuff like that to get people talking, to get people interested in going to the shows and buying a ticket. You know, how many more people are going to buy a ticket to the next MSG house show? Is it going to be thousands? Probably not. But that's not the point. You plant the seed in people's heads that, hey, the next time I'm on the fence about going to a WWE show because nothing ever happens, they can't say that anymore. All right? And it doesn't even affect things all that much. I mean, it doesn't even matter because the match at Battleground is not going to be any different. It's still going to be AJ Styles against Kevin Owens. It's just that the belt now is on the other guy. It's all about Owens getting his rematch now instead of Styles getting his championship match. Now, as far as why this happened, everyone's speculating it was because of this, or Kevin Owens is hurt, or it's because of New Japan. Look, here's my... We don't know, first of all. We don't know for sure. But my guess, they just wanted to get people talking, right? Sometimes you don't have to read too much into these things. I don't think it had anything to do with an injury to Kevin Owens. He wrestled a full match. I mean, how injured could the guy be? I don't think it had anything to do with Kenny Omega winning the U.S. title at the New Japan show last Sunday. I think people are reading a little too much into this. I think people may be searching for something where nothing exists. My guess is they simply made a decision to do a title change, which they do from time to time, to get people talking. And at Battleground, you know what? They may well switch the belt back to Kevin Owens. But like I said, then you know what? The next time they come to the Garden, I'm probably going to think twice about skipping out. And that should be the goal, to get people interested in wanting to come to their shows when they're in town. So I think it's a great idea. Now, Friday was quite the shocking day, not only because of AJ winning the U.S. title, at a house show, but because of the news that dropped late in the day on WWE.com, it was almost like a late Friday news dump when they don't want you to pay too much attention to any big news that breaks. But they announced that Austin Aries, the self-professed greatest man that ever lived, is going to be living somewhere else because he has been released from WWE. The announcement read as follows, said WWE has come to terms on the release of superstar Austin Aries. WWE wishes Aries the best in all of his future endeavors. He has been future endeavored. They future endeavored Austin Aries. Now, according to the Wrestling Observer, and if you read between the lines, you don't even need the Observer. If you just look at Aries' own tweets that day, he posted two. One had a bunch of emojis. The other one just said, "It's a beautiful day." And I don't know if that came right after the announcement or right before. Last I checked, he hasn't tweeted anything since, but he seems pretty happy about this. The belief is that he asked for his release. This is not something that he was fired or he did something wrong. He was arrested or committed some sort of heinous act. He apparently asked to be released, and it was granted. Here's the thing, though. You know, people were like, well, you know, how could WWE cut him? And, you know, what did he actually ask for it? Why would he ask for it? The thing is, if you really stop and think about the last, like, couple of years, right? WWE very rarely releases people on their own anymore. I mean, we used to have, like, the post-WrestleMania. It was like Black Friday. They would have these post-Mania cuts. You'd have spring cleaning. They'd get rid of 10, 15 different people at once. That doesn't really happen anymore. It's like WWE does not like to release anyone. It's just the opposite now. They want to keep you under contract as long as possible. Now, they'll get rid of you if they have a reason to, like a DUI or a third wellness strike. But it's like they like hoarding people. They're a bunch of hoarders. They just don't let people go anymore, not like they used to. It's like they collect people. And they do it, I think, more to keep people away from other promotions now than anything else. They don't want people jumping over to Ring of Honor. They don't want people just jumping over to New Japan or Lucha Underground. Boy, they locked up Jim Ross real quick when the rumor was that he was going to be the lead announcer for that World of Sport thing that never ended up happening. Even though he was working for New Japan and still is, they snatched him up real quick. So I think that's really why they do it now more than anything else. There's a hell of a lot more in terms of competition. Nothing that rises to the level, obviously, of what WWE is. I wish that a Ring of Honor or a Lucha Underground, or maybe even one day, it won't happen. But, you know, it'd be nice to think that as they expand into the U.S., New Japan somehow gains a foothold and they can become, you know, something like what even an ECW or a WCW used to be. To the mainstream audience and become some real competition. But it's just that WWE is so gigantic and they're just so far ahead of the game when it comes to that. I don't see that really ever happening, but it'd be nice. But that doesn't mean that these promotions still aren't competition to them on some level. So that's why they hoard people. They have all these contracts, all these guys under contract, and they signed all those UK guys that it seems like they barely use. I don't know what's going on with them. But the question isn't so much, you know, what happened here. Again, I think we know the answer. It looks like he asked to be let go. The question is why? Why did he ask for it? Right? And by the way, you know, the thing about Aries also to consider is that if they are going to let guys go, Aries would not be the kind of guy they would just randomly let go of. Aries was a star. How big of a star? You can debate that. But he was a star. He was a name. And they wouldn't just let him go unless there was a reason for it. So that's something else to consider. But the question is, why did he ask for it? Why would he want to leave? We don't know for sure, but we can use our big brains to surmise what might have happened. And I don't think it would be all that much of a stretch to think that his position in the cruiserweight division probably had a lot to do with why he wanted out. And who can blame him? Who could blame him for wanting to leave? How many times have I said on this podcast, for the love of God, let the cruiserweights wrestle other people. Don't keep them all in their little bubble. Let a guy like Austin Aries, I might have even mentioned him specifically, let a guy like Austin Aries, now that he wrapped up his program with Neville, right? There ain't much else. There isn't really anywhere else to go once you get beat by Neville. You go down. Let him wrestle someone like Miz for the Intercontinental title. Instead of giving us the 17th installment that we never asked for of The Miz against Dean Ambrose. How many people listening to this right now are really that interested in seeing another match between Dean Ambrose and The Miz? I'm willing to bet not very many of you. I have yet to see an Ambrose-Miz match that was so amazingly spine-tingling that it left me begging for a rematch. So what harm does it do to take somebody like Aries? Aries can talk, right? We know he can talk. They know he could talk. That's why they had him doing commentary for all those months when he was out hurt. Take somebody like Aries and program him with The Miz. Or better yet, turn him heel, which is, I think, the role he's better suited for anyway. That's the role I loved him in TNA. Especially the stuff him and Bobby Roode did when they were the Dirty Heels. I loved them together as a team. I was really bummed when they both ended up in NXT and they didn't do anything with them together, although things have worked out a lot better for Bobby Roode. Even though he's not on the main roster, I'm starting to think that maybe that's better. He's better off not being on the main roster. But, like, that was the role I always really thought that Aries shined in. And let him feud with, like, Seth Rollins or something. I think a Rollins-Aries feud would have been great. Be a hell of a lot better than the horrendously boring feud he's got going now with Bray Wyatt. Aries apparently was originally slotted to wrestle Neville at the MSG show on Friday night. But I guess once he asked for his release or it became clear that he was on his way out, they replaced him with Cedric Alexander. Now, why do I bring this up? Cedric Alexander is the one guy in that cruiserweight division at the very beginning, and who I said last year had the potential to one day be wrestling for a top title in that company. I saw him coming out of that cruiserweight classic. I saw him as somebody who could transcend this division. I mean, he's better than being locked down in this division. Does that mean WWE champion? Does that mean IC champion? One or the other. But he's got a hell of a lot more potential beyond the cruiserweight division. I said that at that time. But there he was, being plugged into Aries' spot at the house show on Friday night, and it really drove the point home for me, again, that, you know, so long as somebody like Cedric is confined to the cruiserweight division and is confined to doing these ridiculous storylines with Alicia Fox and Noam Dar, he's not wrestling for anything of any importance. So you're limiting what these guys can do by keeping them boxed in to their little corner like that. It does them no good. Now, Neville, look, it's great. It's great that Neville found his niche in this heel role. He's the king of the cruiserweights. He's got the division all to himself. He's got the sandbox all to himself. But what does that mean? It's like, that's like being crowned homecoming king on prom night when there's only, three other guys there. That's not really all that impressive. And I'm sorry, I look at a guy like Neville, I don't really care what you think about his size or anything like that. I look at Neville and I say, this guy's good enough to be challenging for a top title in this company. And it's a crime that he's not. If Jinder Mahal can be WWE champion, there is no reason that somebody with real talent like Neville cannot be challenging for the same thing. They don't seem to understand that. And now it looks like they lost a talented guy because of it. Think back a few months. Just remembered something else that I talked about here on the podcast. You notice I say that a lot. I talk about this stuff on the podcast and then all this other stuff happens. This is not, it's not like I'm the amazing Kreskin here. I mean, this is not hard stuff to figure out. Remember when I talked about the WrestleMania 33 DVD? This was several months ago. Not even several, just a few months ago. The North American release, because I think the European version had everything on there, but the US and Canada release didn't have any of the pre-show matches. So I think that was probably the Battle Royal, the Cruiserweight title match between Aries and Neville was left off the WrestleMania 33 DVD here in this country. They didn't even include it. It's like it never happened. You know who else noticed this? Austin Aries. He went on Twitter afterwards, and he said WrestleMania 33 is out on Blu-ray in Canada. Now, I found the tweet. I took a screenshot here of the tweet. The Blu-ray is out in Canada. Too bad one of the greatest matches of the night was left off the US-Canada DVDs. It bothered him bad enough that he saw fit to tweet about it. It's no wonder he asked for his release. He should have seen this coming from a mile away. Now, we don't know if he went to the powers that be and he raised these concerns with them first and tried to talk to them. Maybe he asked to be taken out of the cruiserweight division and they said no. Or maybe he didn't. Maybe he just said, you know what, I'm not happy, I want out. He saw the writing on the wall. He said, I'm obviously never going to get above a certain level here. I want out of here. Now, I'm sure in due time we'll find out whether Aries does like a podcast interview or a radio interview or it just comes out. We'll find out what happened. But you know what? He's better off going somewhere else. If that's their view of him, he's better off going somewhere else. Again, you look at guys like Cody and you look at, you know, these other people that are out there doing their thing and other promotions or on the independent scene, calling their own shots. Aries in Ring of Honor or New Japan, or frankly just working big indie shows around the country, he's going to do very well for himself. He doesn't have to worry, I don't think. You know, the indie scene is thriving right now. Never before have this many people been this disenfranchised with what WWE is giving them. And you know who benefits from that? Everyone else. And it never really used to be like that. It was always a matter of, like, as WWE goes, so goes the rest of the wrestling business. So if WWE was in a hot period, if it was in a boom period right now, it's like the trickle-down effect, right? Everybody else would benefit from it. Wrestling in general would be hot. And so everybody would benefit. And when WWE is ice cold, normally that's not so good news for everybody else. And it seems like that's changed now. Because a lot of indie promotions and a lot of smaller promotions, even the ones that have like local TV and that sort of thing, seem to be doing pretty damn good for themselves. And obviously in the UK, that's a whole other story. The UK scene is still booming. You would think at some point that's going to die down, but it hasn't yet. And it's great to see. It's great to see that people, like wrestling fans, the casual fans, they're either into WWE or they're not. I don't know that a casual fan is even going to know to go seek out, you know, something like Ring of Honor or PWG or something like that. But, you know, if you're a fan of wrestling and you're not happy with what you're getting from WWE, you can't say you don't have other options right now. And that's a good thing, and that's where guys like Aries, I think, can probably look and see the lay of the land and say, you know what, I don't need this shit, man. If, you know, if I feel like I'm just spinning my wheels and I'm wasting my prime earning years here, yeah, maybe I can make more money ultimately in WWE, but if I don't see myself getting above a certain level, he probably can make more money doing the indie thing. I think, was it Cody? I think Cody made a comment in an interview or somebody, I remember somebody mentioning that he was supposedly making more money now doing what he's doing than he was when he was in WWE. I believe it. And there's no reason somebody like Aries can't do the same thing. Austin Aries will have no problem finding work somewhere else and making a good living at it. It just stinks that the guy just got engaged to his fiance. It was like 2 or 3 months ago, right? Thea Trinidad. She literally just signed a deal of her own with WWE like a month ago. And she's working with Cian Almas right now down in NXT. And now Aries is out of the company. It's just like, you know, but hey, if that's what he wanted, then he got what he wanted. He made a decision he felt he had to make. Or he'd still be there if he was happy. I say good for him. But they need to address this cruiserweight problem because that division is in quicksand right now. So here's a piece of news that I had to do a double take on when I first saw it. It's one of those things where you look and you're like, is this a kayfabe news story? Oh no, it's actually a real story. This also broke on Friday to complete the hat trick. Dixie Carter. Yes. There's a name you thought that, or hoped, that you would never hear again. But there it is. Dixie Carter will be making her WWE Network debut this Monday, immediately after Raw, as part of WWE's. They have that 24 documentary series, which is actually really good. And I've been waiting for the Kurt Angle one to air, the homecoming one with Kurt Angle. And it's finally going to air after Raw this Monday night. I'm looking more forward to that than I am Raw. depending, I guess, on what happens tonight at the pay-per-view. But this has been in the works since Angle came back to the company. It's got footage. That's the one where it's got the footage of him hugging Vince, their very first meeting after 10 or 11 years or whatever it was, and they're, like, embracing. And also, as part of the special, they went to Dixie Carter's home to interview her about working with Kurt and TNA. And this is amazing to me, if only because this is the same company who just put Kurt Angle in their Hall of Fame only a few months ago. And at no point during his speech was he apparently even allowed to talk about TNA or the people he worked with in TNA, thank Dixie, or say what you want to about Dixie, but Kurt has more often than not been very complimentary of her. And Kurt spent, you know, a decade working for that company. Kurt spent more time in TNA than he did his first run with WWE. And hey, maybe they didn't ban him, and maybe he decided on his own, oh, you know, politically, maybe I just shouldn't mention this. And he never asked anyone. I mean, who knows? But I honestly don't believe that. I'm positive that, you know, he probably wanted to say certain things and thank certain people and, you know, was probably told you can't do that. I don't believe that if Kurt knew it was okay to mention TNA that he wouldn't have done so, because he's one of those people who didn't leave and trash the company and have all these horrible things to say about TNA. You know, he's talked about the fact that he might not be where he is today were it not for him signing with TNA when he did. He's basically thanked them for saving his life, in a way. And so I find it hard to believe that he didn't want to talk about that, and yet here we are, just a few months later, and Dixie Carter is going to be on the network talking about her time working with Kurt. Dixie finally gets her big moment. She's waited her entire life for this. This is her big close-up. Remember all those years ago, she did like an interview, and or maybe it was after like a press conference or something, and she said that she was hoping that she would be able to work together with Stephanie McMahon. Somebody raised that as like an idea, and she's like, oh, I would love to do that. I would love to be able to work with Stephanie. Like TNA and WWE would unite somehow and work together. Stunning, by the way, that she never got her wish, I know. But now maybe she can. Her dream now can come true. And I know I'm not the only one to be a little fearful and to put two and two together here with this whole texting storyline that they're doing on Raw right now with Kurt Angle. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if Dixie Carter is revealed to be part of this storyline in some way, that this appearance on the network is like the first of several, that there's some sort of agreement here of some kind? You know what? The year we've had with wrestling, nothing would shock me at this point. The things that we've seen, supposedly like ICW in progress and possibly other independent stuff is going to be airing soon on the network, all this crazy shit that's gone down in wrestling this year, and we're only halfway through, nothing would surprise me at this point. I will say, though, I am curious exactly how much time they spend talking about his run in TNA. I'm not even sure they're going to let the TNA initial slip. Every now and then, when you have like a live thing, like a talking smack, TNA's been mentioned. It's not like it's never been mentioned before on the network. But they're very bipolar with this. Like, sometimes it'll be mentioned. Most of the time, you're not allowed to. Even though they're going to have Dixie Carter, who basically ran TNA for so many years, I'm not even convinced they're going to mention the TNA name. I mean, you got to take a look at the description they have right now up on WWE.com. This is what it says. It says, the latest installment of 24 will feature exclusive commentary from many of Angle's closest friends and colleagues, including Mr. McMahon and Dixie Carter, who worked with the Olympic gold medalist from 2006 to 2016. It's a bit of an odd description. She worked with him. Was she his personal trainer? Was she his psychic? Was she his yoga instructor? Maybe they took Zumba classes together? I don't know. They kind of leave it open-ended. I guess we'll find out tomorrow night. I did watch night two of the New Japan G1 special from Long Beach. I talked about part one last week, and I ended up watching part two. It was supposed to be Kevin Kelly and Don Callis, or at least they thought it was, handling the announcing for night two. I know they were there in Long Beach. They obviously thought they were going to be doing the show, or else they probably would not have been there. But it ended up being Jim Ross and Josh Barnett again. I guess it was an Access TV call One person who was not happy with the G1 commentary of JR and Barnett was Tama Tonga of Bullet Club. Friday night, while Part 2 was airing, or maybe it was right after Part 2 ended, on Access, he tweeted this. He said, commentating sucked at the G1 special. At least at real Kevin Kelly knows the storylines and our fucking names. Holy cow. Look, he's not wrong. You know, maybe he could have taken a more tactful approach, but he's not wrong. The commentary, I think, more so on night one than night two, it just wasn't very good. It just wasn't. But boy, he didn't hold back here in his criticism. But, you know, again, could he have been more tactful about it? Yeah, but he's not wrong. There were a lot of issues with the commentary. And the fact is, if this was any announcer not named Jim Ross, forget Josh Barnett for a second, because he wasn't exactly all that, you know, on his A game either. But if this was any announcer not named Jim Ross, people would be giving them hell like you wouldn't believe. And a lot of people did give hell to the announcers, to be fair. But boy, if this was someone else, if this was like a Todd Grisham or a Tom Phillips or someone like that, or even a Michael Cole, my God, can you imagine him going out there and botching names and not knowing Mark from Jay Briscoe and all these other, and the names of moves and all this other stuff? They would rake him over the coals, no pun intended. My God, they would flog this guy. So you got to be fair. When it's just not that great, you got to call it out. And Tama Tonga, boy, did he call it out. I will give him that. Now, night two was the crowning of the first ever IWGP United States champion. Kenny Omega continues to kill it. Two more really good matches, his win over Jay Lethal and his win in the finals over Tomohiro Ishii. I always call him Tomohiro for some reason. Tomohiro Ishii. Let me just say, as good as Omega was, the MVP of the night, for me anyway, was Ishii. That guy is so much fun to watch. I loved that match that he had with Zack Sabre Jr. I loved that match. There was a rope break spot in that match that you have to see if you didn't see it. Sean Waltman, I noticed, he said that it was the best job at getting to the ropes during a submission that he's ever seen in a match. I can't think of one better myself. I'm sure he's seen a lot more wrestling than I have, but and he's worked with some of these guys, but I have not seen a spot like that as good as I saw there in that match. I was able to watch this show live that night, by the way. I thought I would have to wait until Friday to see it, but I was able to see it on Sunday night. And as soon as he made the ropes on that spot, I went on my phone, I went on Twitter, I was like, how sweet was that? I was like, am I the only one? Like, how sweet was that spot? That whole sequence with Ishii, he was locked in this like dual triangle Kimura combo. Every time Ishii would reach out for the rope, Sabre would grab a hand, he would grab his fingers, he would bend them back, he would turn him into a pretzel in some way, and he would try like some new way to torture this man. And then finally, Ishii was able to make the ropes, and it got this huge reaction. It wasn't even like a high spot or a dive or some big move. He got to the ropes, and the place exploded. That was my new favorite match of the weekend by that point, and there was a lot of good wrestling last weekend. So if you didn't see this match, find, so I'm sure it's on New Japan World. Find a way to watch it because it was a lot of fun. Then later in the finals, it was Omega and Ishii. And well, you know, let me talk about the other stuff first. Then I'll get to that. We had the Young Bucks and Roppongi Vice. I wanted to mention this. I thought it was really classy on the Bucks' part to dedicate the match to Dave Meltzer's father. Who unfortunately did pass away last week. And I mentioned last week he wasn't doing... There were like a lot of people who passed away. And I mentioned his father was in rough shape. And he actually did pass away on Sunday morning. So that was that was very sad to hear. But they did this insane-looking Meltzer driver from the ropes to the floor. And they looked into the camera. They dedicated it to his dad. All of a sudden, the entire building, however many people they had there, 2,500 or 3,000... They start a giant Meltzer chant. I'm like, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool of them to do. But I have to say, this match here with the Bucks and Roppongi Vice, as good as it was, like down the stretch as it got into the final minutes, this match is a perfect example of what I talked about on the podcast last week when you do one near fall too many. This match had about five too many. So many insane moves, so many insane spots that should have been the finish, and guys just kept kicking out. It was completely ridiculous. And honestly, you know, it took me out of the match. I mean, by the end, I think they won with like a stereo sharpshooters. They put the Roppongi Vice in these dual submissions. They tapped out, and it was like, eh. I mean, it was by that point, it was like that's how they end the match after everything else that we've seen them do. That everything else that got kicked out of, this is how the match ends. It's like, I don't know. I feel like there's got to be a limit, and they went far beyond the limits of believability there in that match. But Ricochet, I want to talk about Ricochet. Ricochet ran into the ring after the match. He issued a challenge to the Bucks, him and Taguchi against the Bucks for their junior heavyweight tag team titles. And Ricochet's out there. He's got glasses on, and he's doing the Rock's catchphrases. You know, finally, Ricochet has come back, and didn't seem to go over very well. And then he took a shot at Lucha Underground. He called them pricks for not letting him be there sooner. Listening to this promo, I can see why they didn't let him speak during that first season of Lucha Underground. This was pretty rough. We had Billy Gunn and Hiroshi Tanahashi. Now, there's a match I never thought I would live to see or review here on this podcast. This is the kind of match where you would create this in like the creator wrestler mode in 2K18. Like, you can make a Tanahashi, and I'm sure Billy Gunn's probably in the game anyway, and actually, you know, put them in a match. You wouldn't expect to see this on a New Japan show. For a championship, no less. This was for the Intercontinental title. But there it was, and it was what it was. It was the worst of the matches on the show, but that doesn't mean it was a bad match. It's just that you had a show full of matches that ranked from, you know, unreal down to, at its worst, probably just good or okay, which doesn't make for a bad show if that's the worst thing I could say about a match. But of the bunch, yeah, it was the worst, but it was fine for what it was. I mean, you know, Gunn, look, he worked over Tanahashi's arm. Tanahashi, I guess, has like a bicep injury or a bicep tear, and he's still wrestling with it, which probably isn't very smart. But there he is working over Tanahashi's arm for probably 80% of the match. And they did a comedy spot where Tanahashi pulled down Billy's trunks to reveal a thong, which I didn't really have to see. But then it got worse because Billy pulled down Tanahashi's trunks, and there was his bare ass for all the world to see. Billy hit the Famouser for a near fall later in the match. Tanahashi hit the high fly flow, and that was it. He got the pin. I would think this is probably the last truly, you know, quote-unquote big singles match of Billy Gunn's career. He came back for the run on Raw a few years ago as part of the Outlaws. If he ever came back again, it would probably be to do that again. But I think that's probably run its course. And I just, at this point and at this age, I don't see Billy Gunn coming back to, you know, a WWE or an Impact for a big singles run. So this may have been the last really big singles match of his career. And you know what? He didn't embarrass himself out there. You know, it's the best I could say about it. He was fine. Then we got Omega and Ishii in the finals. This was incredible. The Bucks had set up a table outside the ring because they were out there in Omega's corner, as they usually are. They set up a table. So the table is, it is not horizontal to the ring. It is vertical. And you have Omega and Ishii are out on the apron at the same time at one point. And Omega is trying to suplex him backwards through the table. He's trying to give him a Northern Lights. Maybe it was a Northern Lights. But he was trying to give him a German. He's trying to suplex this guy. And Ishii is blocking it. He's holding on. Finally, at one point, he bites down on the top rope. Because I think Omega had his arms hooked. He's like, all right, he doesn't want him to hold on to the rope. So he's hooking his arms behind his head, and he's going to just fling him backwards. And so all Ishii could do was bite down on the top rope to stop Omega from suplexing him over. And they zoomed. They had this very slow camera zoom in on Ishii's face as he's biting down on the rope. It was awesome. He ended up hitting the suplex anyway. I thought he killed him. Omega hit so many V-triggers, so many high knees, I lost count. He hit a reverse Rana on Ishii, spiked him right on his head, hit another high knee, and then finally hit the One-Winged Angel for the win. Kenny Omega is the first ever IWGP United States Champion. Cody came in, he ripped the belt out of his hands. They were building tension here in Bullet Club between these two guys, and finally Cody just hands it back to him and they embrace. Omega cut a total babyface promo here at the end and said, next time we're going to sell out the bigger building. They did announce that they're coming back to the States again next year. They probably could fill a bigger building. How big, I guess, is the question. Could they go into a 15,000-seat building and fill it? You know what? If they don't fill it, I think they could probably come pretty close. I really do. But we will never know because this one only fit about 25 or 2,700. And they packed it. I think they packed it both nights. But they're going to try, I guess, next year. They'll run a bigger building. They'll come back in 2018. Apparently, they sold a shit ton of merch. So much so that they ran out because they didn't bring enough of it. So, by all accounts, it was a very successful first weekend for New Japan here. They're trying to break into the U.S. market. This was really their first major test. And by all accounts, it was a success. However you measure it, whether it's just tickets sold, merchandise sold, Twitter trends, Access TV. Access is in so few homes, I don't even know that they really register, you know, Nielsen numbers. So I'm not even sure how it did on Access. But apparently the Access folks were very happy with it, even if Tama Tonga was not a fan of the Access commentary. But this seemed overall like a big success for New Japan. And you know what? We need more of that. Because again, as people tune out of WWE, if they're just not happy with what they're getting from WWE, now's the time that we need someone. And if it's New Japan, then so be it. Someone's got to come along and really kind of grab a foothold and try to give people an alternative. And if they can do that, more power to them. You know, there's absolutely nothing bad about that. I tell you what, you know, I watched both those shows on back-to-back nights, and I had a lot of fun doing it. When that weekend was over, it was like, oh boy, it's going to be hard to watch Raw. Thankfully, Raw was actually pretty good this week, but I really enjoyed both shows last weekend. Now, before we get to Raw, there is one more thing I want to talk about here, and this was a big story Forbes broke this week. Forbes broke quite the alarming story this week with the headline, Massive WWE Leak Exposes 3 million wrestling fans' addresses, ethnicities, and more. A security expert uncovered an unprotected WWE database with information on more than 3 million fans. So if you're listening to this right now, you could be one of those fans. This includes names, this includes home addresses, email addresses, birthdays, educational background, income, ethnicity, a lot of stuff that you would not want out there. And there it was, sitting unprotected apparently on an Amazon server in plain text for anyone with a specific URL to go ahead and access. And the belief is that the database was misconfigured either by somebody in WWE or by one of their IT partners. WWE told Forbes they are investigating. And they put out a statement later on, said although no credit card or password information was included, and therefore was not at risk, WWE is investigating a vulnerability of a database housed on Amazon Web Services, which has now been secured. WWE utilizes leading cybersecurity firms Smartronics and Praetorian to manage data infrastructure and cybersecurity and to conduct regular security audits on AWS. We are currently working with Amazon Web Services to ensure the ongoing security of our customer information. I can't hear that word, Praetorian, without thinking of that Sandra Bullock movie, The Net. Or as George Costanza's father once said on Seinfeld, with he was trying to mention Sandra Bullock and couldn't think of her name. He's like, you know, that thing with the girl from the bus when she was in Speed. Anyway, I hear that word Praetorian. They were like, I think they were the bad guys in that movie, right? They called them the Praetorians, I think. I think of that movie every time I hear that word. You know, I think also about Mozart's Ghost. Remember that from that movie? Mozart's Ghost, the hottest band on the internet. I feel like it would be so comical to go back now and watch that movie. Just because of how much things have changed in the, 22 years probably since that movie came out. It's a good movie, though. Anyway, it says the ethnicity information would have been something people voluntarily submitted as part of their WWE network profiles. So at least some of the information probably came from network subscribers, of which I am one. So that does not sit well with me. But I have to say this. It was fascinating It was ironic, it was humorous, it was fascinating, all rolled up into one. Seeing some of the tweets about this from angry WWE fans, they were very angry that their privacy may have been violated, even though there's no evidence that it actually was. It could have been, for all we know. Just because there's no evidence to suggest that somebody took the information doesn't mean that nobody did. So they were very upset. You know, their private info was shared publicly without their consent. Their private info shared without their consent. I wonder if those people felt the same way when they were scanning through all those nudes from Paige or Charlotte or any of the other people whose nudes got leaked. I wonder if they felt the same way. I wonder. Point is, that stuff could happen to anybody. It could happen to you. It could happen to me. It could happen to anybody. It's not something to celebrate. It's not cool. I am going to get to Great Balls of Fire after I do some quick Raw thoughts here. Raw was live from the Talking Stick. Ah, my favorite arena. The Talking Stick in Phoenix last Monday. Raw Twitter poll, over 2,000 votes, 54% thumbs up, 46% thumbs down. I would have gone higher myself, but the people have spoken. But hey, I think that's the second week in a row, if I'm not mistaken, that Raw has gotten an overall positive score. So, baby steps. Progress. I'll take what I can get here. This was a good show. I thought that Enzo Amore promo at the start was probably the best stuff I've seen from Enzo since he came to the main roster. I think if titles were won based on promo ability alone, Enzo would be the world champion right now. Unfortunately for him, they're not. That's not how it works. And so once this feud with Big Cass runs its course, there isn't going to be anywhere for him to really go, I think, that's any higher than this. But he's, what they give him right now, he's made the most of it. I like how he cut that promo on Cass, right? He had all this great passion, and he does the mic drop, and then he goes to leave, but then he comes back and he picks the mic back up and keeps talking. Because he had more to say. He was all riled up, and I don't know, it felt real. Right? The passion that he had, it felt real. We don't get enough of that. I like the part he said this one thing about Cass's big boot, like his boot touching his lips and breathing new life into him. He got some good lines off here in this promo. I thought that was cool. Afterwards, he jumps Cass backstage. He goes after him. There's a big pull-apart brawl. He had to try to get some heat back because every week, it's just been Enzo getting laid out, Enzo getting betrayed, Enzo getting betrayed again, Enzo getting laid out. At some point, this guy had to get some heat back on him, and he did. I think he's doomed at the pay-per-view, but at least for this night, they did a good job with Enzo, and I thought his promo was incredible. Now, Miz wrestled Heath Slater for the Intercontinental title. He wrestled him in slacks and shoes because he was not prepared for a championship match when Kurt Angle made the match. And I thought they had a good match. Axel and Dallas beat up Rhino. That distracted Slater, who fell victim to the skull-crushing finale. Dean Ambrose, who did commentary for the match, he ran down. He got laid out by Miz's entourage. I refuse to call them the Miz-tourage. That's such a terrible, god-awful name. Just call them the Entourage. It's a much better name. They probably don't want to, because if they want to market it because of the TV show, they can't. Gives a shit. Just call them the Entourage. Why do we have to create these stupid, dumb-sounding names? So the Entourage laid out Dean Ambrose, and I have to say, Miz and Maurice smooching at the end, thank God. That is fantastic, because that means they're keeping them together. Breaking them up would be the worst thing they could do. We got dueling sit-down interviews with Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar via split screen, which was the second best thing on the entire show. Lesnar was laughing off Joe, just was not taking him seriously at all. This was pissing off Joe quite a bit. Joe absolutely tore into this guy. He said, I've been the best for 20 years. I've beaten AJ Styles. He's like, I did him. Daniel Bryan, I did him. Seth Rollins, I did him. Roman Reigns, I did him. If there was a non-wrestling fan flipping around hearing him say this, they might get the wrong impression of this promo. But if you're a wrestling fan and you know exactly what he means by that, I thought this was pretty badass. I did also think it was amazing that he wasn't allowed to say he's beaten Kurt Angle, because him and Kurt had some battles in TNA, and Kurt is the GM. I mean, you know, it would be kind of timely for him to mention that, because Kurt's on the show. It's not like Kurt is persona non grata like he was at one point. But it's so interesting to me that he can allude to all these matches he had in Ring of Honor, right? I beat AJ Styles, I beat Daniel Bryan. He didn't say Ring of Honor, but he's allowed to at least mention that. But he can't even do that. He can't even allude to a match that he had in TNA. It's hilarious to me. And yet Dixie Carter is going to be on the network tomorrow night. Go figure. So Joe ripped off his mic. He's like, the hell with this. I know you're here. I know they got you sequestered from me. If you're not going to come to me, I'm going to come to you. He rips the microphone off, and Lesnar is amused by this. He's got a smirk on his face. He's the only one left now in the split screen, him and Heyman. He's like, come on, Joe, come get me. So Joe's on a rampage in the back. He's screaming Brock's name. Kurt Angle has all these security idiots who are trying to block him. He goes to walk into the dressing room. They hold him back. Brock walks out. Brock's just laughing at him. And Joe, he came off like the biggest badass here, and Lesnar came off like a total prick. And I'm watching this, and I'm just thinking to myself, they cannot possibly blow this thing off in one match. Even if Joe doesn't win the title tonight, even if he doesn't win the championship, there has to be at least one more match. They can't just blow this off in one night. If they do, it's one of the biggest blunders they've done in years. If they blow this thing off after one match. Finn Balor pins Cesaro with the coup de grace in another good match. There were a few good matches here on this show. This was another one of them. The Hardys, who were on commentary, and the Drifter all got involved at different points. I have to say, listening to the Hardys on commentary, just as themselves, just as plain old Matt and Jeff Hardy, and Matt did like 98% of the talking, it sucked. Not that Matt is like bad or a bad talker, but just hearing them as Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy sucked. I wish that they could do the broken stuff so badly, at least Matt. Like, Jeff can get away with being Jeff because he's a big star and he doesn't have to, you know, be broken. But, you know, Matt has to be broken as quickly as possible. I was so entertained by that whole shtick. It was one of the few things that really had me interested in anything going on at the time in TNA. To go from that, to go from all the wacky stuff he was doing, just to plain old babyface Matt Hardy, it sucks to see because you know he's got to be dying to do that stuff, right? He's a creative guy. You know that this just has to be killing him. And every time I see him in sort of normal mode, it's like, oh, come on, you know, like, can't just get this whole thing fixed already. Let's just get on with this because I'm dying to see what he can do. I'm worried in one respect that, you know, it won't kind of live up to what it was able to be in TNA because he won't have the same level of creative freedom. So part of me is like, I don't know, do I really want this? Be careful what you wish for kind of thing. But it would be a lot more interesting than this. They aired a taped promo from the desert, taped earlier in the day, with Bray Wyatt. They should have left him out there. They should have just hopped back in the car or the truck or whatever and driven off, like leave like a cloud of smoke behind him and just leave him out there. This was not one of the better things on the show. I guess they're staying true to the character. He's doing all of his spooky shit, and they're splicing in clips of crabs and I guess crabs. I don't know. I'm trying to think what else they had. Spiders and shit. But he's out there talking about man worshiping the sun. I think he was out in the sun, frankly, for too long. I think it fried his brain. He's talking about, you know, I'm the chaos that fuels the fire. He's like, can you hear me, Seth? Can you hear me? He starts shouting this. It's like, maybe he could be the new can you hear me guy. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now for Verizon? That guy, he jumped from Verizon to Sprint. They actually stole the can you hear me now guy. So maybe Bray can fill that gap. Instead of run, though, I think his new phrase should be pin me, pay me. I know it's been used before, but I think it's kind of catchy. I think it could work for him. I think pin me, pay me would actually work very well for Bray Wyatt. Braun Strowman and Apollo Crews was the main event. Now, normally, if I said that, you would think Braun Strowman and Apollo Crews, the main event. That sucks. Now, it was actually, I enjoyed this, and I'll tell you why in a second. Titus O'Neil, right? The point is here, Titus O'Neil got his man a main event match. The Titus brand got its first main event here on Raw. That's the good news. The bad news that, in doing so, he got his guy publicly executed here. Now, I mentioned earlier that the Samoa Joe Brock Lesnar segment I thought was the second best thing on this show. which begs the question, what would be the first? I'm so happy you asked. The best thing on the entire show came during this match. Apollo Crews had Braun Strowman down. He gave him an enziguri to the back of the head. He got Braun down flat on his back, and so he went for his standing moonsault, which is very impressive. I still say it's still impressive to see a guy of his size. He's not that tall, but he's a big guy, and to see a guy do a standing moonsault is still very impressive. What was even more impressive is that in mid-flight, as he was on his way down, Braun Strowman stuck his feet up, and he kicked this guy a good 5 feet into the air, and Crews landed right on top of his head. Now, he was okay, so it's okay to laugh. At the time, we didn't know he was okay, and Corey Graves was laughing his ass off. He could not even help himself. Corey Graves had to apologize for laughing. That's how much he couldn't control himself. This was unbelievable. It's just like a brief thing, but he just kicked this guy like he was nothing, like he was garbage, and he landed right on top of his head. It was one of the funniest things I've seen all year. Now, after that, he just destroyed him. Braun just beat the piss out of him. He gave him not one, not two, but three running power slams. Finally put the guy out of his misery. He went to give him a fourth one. Titus stepped in. Titus ended up getting power slammed. So Strowman is dragging Crews all the way to the ambulance that he's got parked in the back of the arena. And he throws him into the back. You know, he's banging on the side of the ambulance to let the driver know, okay, you can leave now. And the ambulance doesn't leave. And Braun's like, huh, well, I wonder why it's not leaving. Now, Braun is not the smartest guy in the world. Obviously, he's not the brightest crayon in the box. So he goes to investigate. And when he goes to open the driver's side seat, out jumps Roman Reigns. And Roman attacks him. And now, this is the first time we had seen Roman on the show. He wasn't even supposed to be on the show. And he jumps out and he's in his ring gear. And I just think stuff like that is really dumb. Like, why is he in his ring gear? Why can't Roman Reigns just come out wearing street clothes? Would he not actually look cooler that way if he came out with, like, sunglasses and jeans or some shit like that? Like, why is he in his gear? But there he was. He was in his gear, and he jumps out, and he's beating up Strowman. He gave him a spear off the stage through some tables that were stacked about 2.5 feet below. Strowman came up bloody, had this big gash on the back of his shoulder. But he did get up. The monster did rise to his feet, and that's how they went off the air. Which leads to great balls of fire. Predictions here, I want to just give a quick shout-out to WrestleRumble.com. You should all go check out WrestleRumble. They have their monthly pick'em for all the pay-per-views. You can buy an entry. It's a lot of fun. We actually gave away a free year of pick'ems to one lucky person on SoundOff 500. And you should all check out WrestleRumble.com. Let me run through the card here. We'll start from the bottom. We'll work our way up to the top. We have Neville on the kickoff show defending the Cruiserweight title against Akira Tozawa. I like both guys. I'm sure they'll go out there and have a really good match, really fun match. I don't see Neville dropping the title, so I think Neville is going to retain. He's my pick. We have Enzo Amore against Big Cass. I can't see this going any way other than Cass winning. You know, I mean, I guess they could do the chicken shit heel thing where maybe Enzo is just running wild. Maybe he's laced, you know, he takes a bunch of Molly before the match and he's going nuts and all this stuff. And then, you know, Cass just leaves and gets counted out. That to me would be stupid. But because I don't see Cass being the chicken shit heel. I think that would be a mistake. I really do. And they've sort of avoided doing that with Baron Corbin. And I think Corbin comes off better for it. You know, you can have chicken shit heels. They've got plenty of them on the roster. The Miz is one, right, most of the time. But I don't think somebody like Cash should be booked in that role. So hopefully he doesn't walk out or do something stupid like that. I think he's going to win. I think even if they have a rematch, I think he'll win the rematch. You know, this is the time, you know, Cass, when he cuts these promos talking about how I'm the money isn't me. It's not just the promo, it's the truth. I mean, if there's any money in either one of these guys, I mean, Enzo, the money for Enzo is in his mouth. As a wrestler, the money is absolutely not in Enzo Amore. If we're talking about full-time, like, in-ring guy, the money is in Cass. I mean, he could be a big player down the road. And so you've got to build him up. And, you know, to me, him running away or doing something like that from Enzo Amore doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So I just see him flat up, straight up, beating Enzo here. So Cass is my pick. We have a 30-minute Iron Man match for the Raw Tag Team titles. Most falls in 30 minutes wins. Sheamus and Cesaro defending against the Hardy Boys. I think Sheamus and Cesaro are going to retain. If I had to pick how many falls, let's see here. I would say that Sheamus and Cesaro win, and if I had to predict the fall count, I would say they end up winning 4-3 would be my prediction. Alexa Bliss defends the Raw Women's Championship against Sasha Banks. Probably the first I would think of at least two matches between them. I think that they'll probably do another one at SummerSlam. And I think Alexa's going to win. I think Alexa will retain. I don't see them doing the title change just yet. The Miz defends the Intercontinental title against Dean Ambrose. He absolutely should not be dropping the title here. Miz is my pick to win. This is the feud that will never end, by the way. So I'm sure this is probably the first in a long line of IC title matches that Ambrose will get. He'll probably get another one at SummerSlam. It's just ridiculous at this point. You give somebody enough title shots, eventually they're going to win. Seth Rollins against Bray Wyatt. I'm going with Seth Rollins. Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman in an ambulance match. It's amazing how things change in just a few weeks here. If you would have asked me this question 2 or 3 weeks ago, my pick would have been Braun. I thought that Braun was going to SummerSlam to challenge Lesnar for the championship, and I don't know what the main event is going to be for SummerSlam anymore. There's been rumors of a lot of different matches, but it doesn't look like Braun and Brock are in the cards for SummerSlam anymore, and that is disappointing. But if it's in favor of, let's say, getting Samoa Joe in that main event, because this guy has been just on fire the last few weeks, then I'm all for it. Because sometimes you got to go with your hot hand, and I think Joe has been hot on this show now for many weeks. And so because things may have changed, I think that Roman Reigns is going to get the win here over Braun Strowman. I think Roman wins the ambulance match. And then it comes down to the Universal Championship. Brock Lesnar defending the title against Samoa Joe. The Destroyer against the Beast. That's the billing here for this match. This is the most interested I've been in a WWE pay-per-view main event in a long, long time. And I think the same could be said probably for a lot of you guys listening to this right now. Whether you hate Joe, or you absolutely cannot stand Brock and just want that belt off him no matter what, you probably fall into one of the two camps. Point is, you're probably interested in seeing this match. And who should win this match? Who do I want to see win this match? I want to see Samoa Joe win, and I think Samoa Joe should win. I think Samoa Joe should win the Universal Championship. That's what I'd like to see. What do I actually think will happen? I think that there will probably... Well, my prediction is that Brock retains. My prediction is that Brock Lesnar walks out with the Universal title. The question is how? Does he just pin Samoa Joe clean in the middle? Is there a non-finish? Do they both get counted out? Do they both get disqualified? You know, the referee can't, break them up or something and the ref gets knocked out. I mean, that's a little harder to say. If they're going to do a rematch at SummerSlam, which I think they should, because even if Joe wins, right, Brock gets a rematch. So they absolutely should do the rematch at SummerSlam in some form or fashion. I don't think that he should be beating Joe clean in the middle. I think it should be some sort of a DQ or a no contest. As disappointing as that may be, there's a way for you to do the match where you give people what they want. Give people a fight. Give people a fight. And I think even if you do some sort of a disputed finish, they probably won't be too upset about it. It's all in how you do it. It's all in how you do it. I remember a pay-per-view main event with Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker. It was his first title defense for Brock coming out of SummerSlam when he beat The Rock. And him and Undertaker went to a no contest because the referee could not separate them. And I think the ref got knocked down, so he called for the bell. And people shat all over that finish. And it really did, the way they did it, it really did come off as lame. So hopefully they don't do it quite the same way. But they did it that way so that it would lead into the Hell in a Cell match the next month. And that's where Brock finally got the big win over Undertaker. I could see something similar happening here, where they don't change the title here, but they see what they got with Joe. Hopefully they're smart enough to see, hey, we got something here. There's some genuine interest here in this guy. Let's not beat him. There's a concept. Let's not beat this guy just yet. But maybe instead of it being like, let's disqualify these guys for kicking too much ass kind of thing, you know, maybe there's a huge table spot, or maybe they go through the set, or they do something like that, and the match just ends in a no contest, and it feeds into a rematch. But unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot of faith in them to do the right thing. I hope they do. I hope they do. But I do think Brock is ultimately going to retain here. And I'm okay with that if they decide, hey, let's do the title change at SummerSlam instead. But I do think that Samoa Joe should get the Universal Championship. I think it would make a lot of sense to put that title on a guy that is full-time and actually has some momentum right now. I think they might add a match. There's two matches, potentially, that they could add. I'm surprised that Finn Balor is not on the card against Elias Samson. I guess they're saving that match. Hopefully not for SummerSlam. I would think they could do better than the Drifter for Balor at SummerSlam. But they could add that match, or they could add Goldust against R-Truth. I think of the two, that one would be the more likely one. If they had a kill time, they would add that. And if so, I'll do a preemptive prediction here. I'm going with Goldust for the win. SmackDown Live. Twitter poll, about 2,000 votes, just like Raw. Although the percentages here were quite different. 80% thumbs up, 20% thumbs down. This was the July 4th show, so they had the old school red, white, and blue ring ropes, which I love. This was a real good show, too. Raw and SmackDown, back-to-back good shows. How often does that happen? Not often enough. We had the return of John Cena. John Cena came out, got his usual mixed reaction. He did nothing, by the way, to explain how or why he is suddenly a free agent. He just is, because he's John Cena. Rusev came out. He interrupted John Cena. Rusev actually got a pretty decent pop coming out when they hit his music. People seemed actually really, they were either really happy to finally see him back, because they've been teasing it for so many months now, or they just were so happy that somebody interrupted Cena. Maybe it was a combination of both. But he kind of got a decent pop coming out. And he tried to turn the crowd against him. He insulted the American fans. He said, all you do on Independence Day is stuff your faces with greasy burgers and hot dogs. And everybody cheered. They started a yes chant. And Rusev was disgusted by this. He's like, you stupid idiots. I didn't mean that as a compliment. Well, you don't know Americans very well then, if that's what you think. So somehow this ended up with Cena challenging Rusev to a flag match. I guess they were feeling all patriotic because it was July 4th. And so, and by the way, Cena had such a lame joke here. He, you know, Rusev is from Bulgaria. So Cena at one point said something about bulge area, talking about his cock. This was not, this was one of those John Cena promos that just makes you want to rip your hair out. This was not one of his better promos. But somehow this all ended up in him challenging Rusev to a flag match, which they're going to have at Battleground. So poor Rusev, his first night back, his very first night, it's 2015 all over again. Right back into the wall, called Cena. AJ Styles and Chad Gable, they had a match. A really good match, a fun match, very short. It wasn't really long enough to be anything overly special, but the 8 or 9 minutes they gave them was really good. I want to see these two work together again. Styles won with the phenomenal forearm. He really put over Gable afterwards, like on Talking Smack. AJ was putting this guy over. I saw that they did a backstage thing at Madison Square Garden with AJ after he won the U.S. title, and even there in the YouTube video, and this was days later, he brought up Chad Gable again, and he put the guy over. So I'm hoping that the more we see of Chad Gable in these singles matches, he had one against Kevin Owens, now he had one against AJ Styles. As much as I love the American Alpha team, they're not doing dick with American Alpha. And so if they're not going to do anything with American Alpha, then fuck it. I'd like to see Chad Gable branch out on his own. And I think Jason Jordan, too, he's a talented guy. He could probably do very well on his own. But I'd like to see Chad Gable get a nice singles push for himself. Because I said it back in NXT, and I'll say it again now, this guy is a lot of fun to watch. I have more fun watching him than I do most people on the roster. And I see a lot of Kurt Angle in him. I saw a lot of Kurt Angle in him from the first time I saw him in NXT. And not just because of the Olympic thing or because he wears a singlet. This guy, even with his comedic timing, his knack for comedy and humor, it's almost eerie how much he reminds me of Kurt. He's a lot like him in a lot of different ways. And that's not a bad person to be like. That's not a bad person to emulate. Not that he's trying to emulate Kurt Angle, but it's not a bad comparison to make. So I'd like to see more of him in there. You know, I'm always very impressed when I see him bust out that chaos theory, especially on a guy bigger than him, and he just, you know, lifts them, like, muscles them up into the air and slams them down. He's a talented guy, and again, they love doing their comedy stuff. He can do that too. We saw more of that in NXT than we have on the main roster. We haven't really had a chance to see Chad Gable do, like, comedy on the main roster, but he can do it. He can do it. So this match with AJ, more than anything, it's like, you know, yeah, he got beat second week in a row, but it's true. You know, he gained a lot more from losing this match than he did probably from winning it, because it wasn't like he was going to win the Battle Royal. This match was for a spot in the Battle Royal later in the night. So he probably gained a lot more in losing than he would have had he won the match. Carmella had a celebration in the ring on the heels of her second Money in the Bank win. I think she called it a Carmella-bration or something like that. That's like that Miz-tourage, all these awful names that they come up with. Daniel Bryan came out. He announced that he was not only firing, not firing, my God. He should fire James Ellsworth. Why does he keep James Ellsworth around? If James Ellsworth is constantly cheating and making his life hell, and he's not really contributing anything to the roster, like, if I'm the GM of the show, I can his ass. Why even keep somebody like him around? But he announced that he was fining James Ellsworth $10,000. And he was suspending him without pay for 30 days. So, fining a guy 10 grand and then suspending him without pay, that's pretty savage right there. That's a pretty savage move by Daniel Bryan. Bryan said that if he violates any of this, if he comes back, if he shows his face, Carmella will be stripped of her Money in the Bank briefcase. And by the way, I've seen these rumors. I don't know if they're true or not. We'll see on TV this week. The latest rumor is that the word briefcase is now banned. You got to call it the Money in the Bank contract. You're not allowed to call it a briefcase. It wouldn't shock me, because Vince McMahon is out of his mind. But we'll see on TV this week if they mention the word briefcase. Just something to watch out for. Naomi beat Lana with her Feel the Glow submission, I guess it's called, in the middle of the ring. 10 seconds. 10 seconds it took her to beat Lana to retain her championship. Well, thanks for coming. Thanks for coming, Lana. I would say that she's dead and buried, but they sent Tamina into the ring when the match was over. Tamina kind of had a little stare down going with Naomi, and then she turned to Lana and she said to Lana, go. Like, leave, get out. And they left together, and Lana looked very confused by this, and so it looks like they might be pairing off Lana with Tamina, which, if that's the case, I wouldn't call that a burial. It's kind of weird to think that it actually could mean that she might get a push out of this. It could be one of those things where she just gets beaten and beaten and beaten, and then all of a sudden, you know, they pair her off with a heavy or a bodyguard or whatever role Tamina might play here. And suddenly Lana might actually end up getting a push out of this. I'll reserve judgment until I see where they go with this. But what they've done with Lana so far has not done Lana any favors. I will say that. Lana and Rusev, what the hell did those two people do to the people backstage to deserve this kind of treatment? Poor Rusev has to go up against Cena in his first match back. Lana's getting beaten 10 seconds. Boy, they must have done something to piss off the powers that be. Maybe it's still the engagement stuff. Boy, talk about holding a grudge. If that's what's going on here, if they're still in the doghouse because they ruined their whole Dolph Ziggler love triangle storyline bullshit when they announced that they were engaged and TMZ picked up on it. If that really is still what's going on here, then I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, you talk about petty. You talk about petty people. Now, one thing about Naomi I didn't mention is the fact that she has a new belt, or not so much a new belt, but there's a new look to the SmackDown Women's Championship. It lights up now. It glows. Really, it looks like a giant Christmas tree ornament is what it looks like. But you know what? At least it doesn't spin. It doesn't spin. I like it better than the spinner. There, I said it. Her gimmick is that she glows, right? She's radioactive. We talked about this before. Now she has a belt that glows. It kind of makes sense. If she is radioactive, anything she touches is probably going to glow. It's That's why I said, if you're going to come to the arena, you ought to be wearing one of those hazmat suits. I'd be very worried to be within 50 feet of this woman. But honestly, you know, it doesn't bother me. I saw people very upset, like in the Facebook group, about the belt. It's the SmackDown Women's Belt. You know what I mean? It looks like a toy belt to begin with. You notice that with that championship? It's so stiff. It doesn't even move. It's a replica belt. It's not even like the real deal. They actually use a replica belt on TV. It's a toy. It's like, you know. And plus, here's the other thing. It wouldn't be right for me to say, well, this belt sucks. I can't believe they're doing this. Meanwhile, I love Chris Jericho's light bright jacket. How is this really any different, right? I mean, oh, it's a championship. Eh. The light bright jacket looks cool. I think the belt looks cool. It doesn't bother me. Who cares? The rap battle between the New Day and the Usos I thought was fun. I'm pretty much in the same camp as a lot of you guys. I thought this was one of the best things on the show. Not the best thing. That would go to the AJ Gable match, but this was probably the second most entertaining thing on the show. Wale was out there as the host. Wale may be a Grammy Award nominee, but he is no Grammy Award winner like the Usos are, at least according to Lillian Garcia. Let us never forget that one time on Raw where she referred to the Usos as Grammy Award winners instead of Slammy Award winners. One of the many botches that Lillian will never live down. Obviously, everybody was talking about the comment that one of the... I think it was Jey Uso made this comment about Xavier Woods that was sort of like a little wink at the whole Paige thing. They said they called him Rated R. Your boy Xavier Woods is rated R, and everybody went, oh, shit. And it got a big reaction. And apparently on their YouTube channel, WWE edited that comment out of the rap battle. It is no longer in there. Arguably the best part of the entire thing, they took it out. It wasn't even like he said like a bad word or something like really overly offensive. Like, the only people who are even going to get that are the people who already know about it. It's the people on the internet who probably watched the damn videos and saw all the photos. You know what I mean? Like, little Jimmy or Johnny in the crowd isn't going to know what the hell he's talking about. But yet they went on YouTube and they edited the comment out. And it's like, ugh, God. But that was the sickest burn of this entire segment. I thought, and it was comical to me. Obviously, they gave the win to the Usos to the New Day. And, yeah, the New Day got a couple of good shots off, but the Usos clearly won. Like, you know, the Usos are really good when it comes to this kind of stuff. And clearly they won, except they didn't. They gave the win to the New Day. But I enjoyed the segment. I just think it's ridiculous that they felt the need to edit that line out in the YouTube video. Maybe they were worried about El Patron coming after them. I'm going to talk about him. I have something to say about him here in a little bit. We had the Independence Day Battle Royal was the main event to determine who would go on to challenge Kevin Owens at Battleground for the United States Championship. Seems kind of pointless now, doesn't it? Well, I mean, look, at least the guy that actually beat him for the belt was the winner of this Battle Royal. At least that part of it made sense. But it was AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, Luke Harper, Fandango, Tyler Breeze, Connor, Victor, Zack Ryder, Mojo Rawley, Jason Jordan, Sin Cara, Eric Rowan, and Ty Dillinger. They were the participants here in this Battle Royal. Ziggler was the first one gone. I think I blinked and he was out. Very quickly, he was dumped out of the ring. And if I had to take a guess as to who's next to leave WWE of their own volition and say adios, Dolph would be the guy. Luke Harper was the one who eliminated him. And speaking of Luke Harper, he wins for sad tweet this week. I would have given sad tweet to Del Rio, but technically what he posted was on Instagram, which I'll talk about later. So I technically couldn't give him sad tweet. So I gave it to Luke Harper, and here's why. Luke Harper eliminated a few different people here from this Battle Royal, including Connor of the Ascension. And as soon as he dumped Connor out of the ring, Mojo Rawley snuck up and he eliminated Luke Harper. Well, on the official WWE Twitter account, they credited Connor's elimination to Mojo. They said, Mojo's on a roll after eliminating both Connor and Luke Harper, which was factually incorrect. Mojo did not eliminate Connor. And this apparently hurt Luke Harper's feelings because he quoted their tweet on his own Twitter. And he said, "Who eliminated Connor? Thanks for watching at WWE. My name is Luke Harper." It is the saddest of sad tweets when you have to correct your own company about their own show minutes after this actually played itself out on TV. Harper never tweets anything other than the day of the week, followed by, "You know what that means." That's literally all he ever tweets. If it, like today, I haven't even checked yet, but I guarantee you if I go on Luke Harper's Twitter, his latest tweet says, "It's Sunday, you know what that means." And of course, you do know what that means. That means Sound Off Sunday. But that's literally all he ever tweets. Until this. They hurt his feelings that badly that he actually tweeted something else for a change. And WWE eventually, if you're going to go look for it, it ain't there anymore. WWE pulled the tweet, and then I guess Harper deleted his tweet because there's no sense in quoting something that no longer exists, which would explain why nobody talks about Dolph Ziggler anymore. Mojo dumped Zack Ryder as tag team partner. Ryder did not look very happy about that, but, you know, hey, it's a battle royal, dude. It's every man for himself, you woo-woo whiny little bitch. Quit your crying. That's what I said in the 92 Rumble when Hogan got dumped out and he was pitching a fit. And Sid's like, "It's every man for himself, big boy." It's true. Hogan was a little bitch in that Royal Rumble, just like Zack Ryder was here. So it came down to AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, and Ty Dillinger. And then it came down ultimately to Styles and Sami. And Sami was out on the apron. AJ hit the Pele kick, knocked him off the apron. And so AJ Styles wins the Battle Royal. Kevin Owens came in. He had been ringside doing commentary. And he immediately ran in. He attacked AJ Lee. He gave, but, you know, AJ fought back. And AJ ended up posing with the U.S. title to end this show. And then 3 days later, now the title belongs to him. We'll see how long that lasts. I'm guessing it probably is not going to last very long. Probably until Battleground, if I had to wager a guess. But we'll do Battleground predictions in a few weeks. We have to get through Great Balls of Fire first before we can get to Battleground.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT open with a match, Killian Dane and Alexander Wolfe of Sanity against Cassius Ohno and Hideo Itami. Ohno had gotten yanked off the apron by Wolf, and when Itami went for the tag, nobody was there. And he wrestled for the rest of the match, really, on his own. Ohno was trying to reach for the tag, and Itami wouldn't give it to him, and Ohno confronted him. He ended up getting knocked out of the ring, and Itami got Wolf up for the GTS. He nailed the GTS, but then he got wiped out by Killian Dane with that giant, just full body block that he does, and got pinned. So this was to, I guess, advance the story between Ohno and Itami. I would guess that this would lead to a match between the two of them in Brooklyn next month at TakeOver. Ember Moon was interviewed at the Performance Center about being next in line for Asuka. And Ruby Riott was training in one of the rings. They have like 7 different rings. And she was in one of them and she overheard what Ember said. So she got out of the ring and she came over and she said, "You know, I am next in line for a shot at Asuka because I haven't gotten my shot yet." Even though she just had her shot in those 3-way matches. And in fact, in that elimination match that they did with Asuka, Nikki Cross, and Ruby Riott, Ruby was the first one eliminated. So yes, you did get your shot and you lost. You're a loser. Go away. Johnny Gargano returns to NXT next week. Tommaso Ciampa, by the way, they did not announce this on the show, but I saw an item, might have been on Pro Wrestling Sheet, but it's looking like early 2018 before we get to see Ciampa again. So talk about icing a hot story, man. That sucks. That really sucks. We got a pre-taped interview at the Performance Center with Peyton Royce and Billie Kay. Neither woman had any makeup on, and not for nothing, I thought Billie looked a lot better here than she does when she's got all that makeup caked on her face. She looks like a plastic Barbie doll when she's got all the makeup on, and here, like in her more natural state, I guess you would say, she looked pretty good. So, just saying, just an observation. Meanwhile, right behind them, as they were being interviewed, there was a shouting match between Andrade Cien Almas and Thea Trinidad, probably talking about the Cruiserweight division. And they never identified her. She stormed off before they could get a word with her. And when the interview lady person asked Almas who was that woman, he said that she was loco. She was loco en la cabeza. So that's how that ended. Bobby Roode and Roderick Strong in the main event for the NXT Championship. Roddy's fiance Marina was at ringside along with Roddy's mother. They were seated in the front row. It's rare that we get an NXT title match on a non-takeover show, so this did feel like a big deal, even if the Full Sail crowd didn't really treat it like that, didn't really make it feel that way. I have not been impressed by this Full Sail crowd of late. They had a long match, probably 20 minutes plus. Roode hit the glorious DDT, but Roddy kicked out. Roode started talking trash to Marina in the front row, and that pissed off Roddy. He hit his backbreaker finish. He had Roode pinned, but Roode swept his foot underneath the bottom rope just before the count of three. And the referee did count three, but as soon as he did, he realized he had made a mistake. And that did not stop the ring announcer from announcing Roddy as the new NXT champion. They played his music. He went out into the front row. He hugged his fiance and his mom. Referee came over and broke the bad news to him. And he said, no. It was only two. He got his foot under the rope. And Roode knocked him when he tried to get back in the ring. Roode knocked him off the apron, and Roddy hit the barricade. He gave him a glorious DDT right in front of his fiance, right on the floor. Then he rolled him in the ring, gave him another one, and then he pinned him. So Bobby Roode retains the NXT Championship here. And I guess all I can say is, paging Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre, you're up next. Actually, they posted a video on their YouTube channel of McIntyre. He was leaving Full Sail, and he was attacked by Sanity. He was attacked by Killian Dane and Alexander Wolfe. So it looks like he may have to first go through Killian Dane before getting a title shot against Bobby Roode, which, that would be one way to kill time between now and Brooklyn. The question is, if they do Bobby Roode and Drew McIntyre at TakeOver in Brooklyn, do you change the title? Roode has been a champion now since what? Probably January, right? Since San Antonio. He's been the champion for the entire year, basically. He's got a good thing going. I'm digging Bobby Roode as the NXT champion. Do you change the title? Thing is, as much as I'm digging Roode as the champ, McIntyre has been cold as a block of ice lately because they haven't been doing anything with him. It's nothing that he's done. But that's kind of the point. They've not done anything with him. And so I think they need to heat him up first before doing the title change. I almost think you do the first match and have Roode cheat to win. Then you do the title change at the next TakeOver show in October or November, whenever the next one is. I think it's November. But let's see what happens between now and then. Let's see what they do. Maybe McIntyre gets super hot and maybe they decide, hey, we want to call Bobby Roode up to the main roster. I would be very concerned about that at this point. But you certainly can't say that Roode doesn't belong on the main roster. He probably should have been there from the beginning. And if they decide, hey, we need him on Raw, we need him on SmackDown, then that might necessitate a title change. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. Hey, I haven't done this in a few weeks, but I have something nice to say about Impact.
Say something nice about Impact.
I did see part of Slammiversary. I was really only interested in how they were going to handle the Scott Steiner match. It was Steiner and Josh Matthews against Joe Park and Jeremy Borash. I don't know who is in charge of putting that thing together, but kudos to whoever it was. I thought the match was entertaining as hell. It was probably JB. I bet he probably had a lot to do with it. Behind Omega Ishii and Ishii and Zack Sabre from the New Japan show last weekend, this was my third favorite match from Sunday night. There was a lot of good wrestling on Sunday night, and this was my third favorite match of the night. More than half the match was taped the night before. They all brawled backstage at one point. That's when they cut to the Final Deletion style footage of Steiner and Josh Matthews chasing after Joe Park and JB. And it was shot just like the old Broken Matt stuff. I can see why the Hardys supposedly tried to convince JB to come with them to WWE when they left Impact. First of all, watching Scott Steiner riding around in a golf cart trying to run down the babyfaces while calling them fat asses is just the greatest thing ever. Last week it was Scott Steiner talking about why the WWE Hall of Fame should be on the moon. And this week, he's riding in a golf cart yelling fat ass at people for about 60 seconds straight. I could watch that all day long. I thought his battery pack malfunctioned or something. He just kept calling them fat asses over and over and over again. At one point, Matthews got backdropped into a swimming pool by JB, and Shark Boy showed up in the pool, went after Josh. Meanwhile, Joe Park is getting his ass kicked somewhere else by Scott Steiner. All of a sudden, Father James Mitchell makes his first TNA appearance in years. Or Global Force, whatever the fuck. How this man was never picked up by WWE is a mystery to me. All those reboots of the Kane character over the years, he would have been the perfect person, I think, to manage Kane at one point. He handed the old Abyss mask to Joe Park, so you knew what was coming. Eventually, they all brawl back down to the ring. JB's all by himself out there. Scott Steiner puts him in the Steiner recliner. When all of a sudden, the monster Abyss reemerges to make the save. And he brought thumbtacks with him. He gave Josh Matthews a black hole slam onto the tacks. And then poor Jeremy Borash, he hit a splash off the top rope onto Josh Matthews for the pin. And he got all these tacks. He gets them stuck in his hands and his palms and he's all cut up. So he got the win. He got the win for his team, but his hands were all bloody with puncture wounds when it was over. And actually, when he came back out later on, they had him ring announce for the main event. His hands were all taped up. But this was a lot of fun. This really was a lot of fun. I don't need to see Scott Steiner wrestling anymore, but you know what? I'm all for giving him his own talk show segment. You know what? That would get me to watch every single week. You give him his own talk show segment, call it, whatever, Freaks and Fat Asses or something. But just put a mic in the guy's hand and you have got gold. You've got Global Force gold.
Say something nice about Impact.
Now, one more thing on GFW, and this is the not so nice about Impact part. Alberto El Patron beat Lashley to win the Impact World title last Sunday. After the pay-per-view went off the air, he took the house mic and he started shooting on WWE and talking about how we're real wrestlers here, we're not sports entertainers and that sort of thing. And hey, the sports entertainer stuff deserves to be mocked. I'm all for that. But you're not in WWE anymore. You're in Global Force Wrestling. You are the Global Force Wrestling champion. Enough with WWE. This guy is obsessed over WWE. I used to say this all the time when I used to watch Impact, and all the ex-WWE guys, all they would talk about was their time in WWE. It's like TNA loved to have these guys out there talking about WWE, probably thinking it made them feel like a big deal, when in reality it made them feel like a Mickey Mouse operation. That used to happen all the time. There is no better way to make your product look Bush League than by constantly talking about the other guys. So someone sent in a report to Wrestling Inc. This person attended the Impact tapings the very next night, and Alberto did it again. He took the mic, he started to shoot on WWE, only this time the officials in the back had enough sense, they cranked up his music so loud to try to drown him out, but then he starts threatening that, I don't need a mic, I can just scream. I could just shout. This is what the person said at the Impact tapings. She said, El Patron grabs a mic. He says it's that time of night when he talks about that company in Stamford. And his attorney, however, called him out last night and asked him, what the fuck are you thinking, as he recently lost enough money from his divorce. At that point, production cut the mic and played his music. El Patron shouted over the music, saying that he has enough voice to scream. His music played louder. He tried to continue before finally giving up. His own company tried to cut him off to get him to shut up. Dude, again, I say, you are the Global Force champion. You have not worked in WWE in almost a year. Give it up. It is embarrassing at this point. It is pathetic. This guy despises them so much, he can't stop talking about them. Remember those Periscope videos that Paige was posting a while back? Every single one of them. He could not shut up about Triple H. He could not shut up about WWE. to the point that Paige was clearly embarrassed and she would physically take her hand and put it over his mouth to try to shut him up. And it would never work. He is now the top guy in another company. He doesn't act like it, but he is. He's positioned now as the number one guy in Global Force. And every time he stands in that impact zone and he goes off like that on WWE, it makes them look second rate. They just changed the name of the company. They're trying to move forward. They're trying to wash the stink off from those TNA initials. This doesn't help. This would be like Brock Lesnar grabbing the mic after he, you know, after a Universal title match and shooting on Dana White at the end of every show because he didn't like the way he was treated in UFC. Or Drew McIntyre, after he eventually wins the NXT title, grabbing a mic and shitting on Impact for waiting too long to send him a new contract. He would never do that. You know why he would never do that? Well, I mean, A, he would get fired, but he wouldn't do that because his responsibility now is to NXT, not Impact, and he's smart enough to know that. He's moved on. And as if that wasn't bad enough, he went on Instagram last night and challenged Triple H and the Usos to come to his restaurant. He has a restaurant down in San Antonio. I guess SmackDown's going to be there on Tuesday night. He challenged them to come to his restaurant after the show and fight him. He hates Triple H with a passion. He calls him the man with the big nose and no balls. That's his name for Triple H. And I guess now he's got beef with the Usos after they made that rated R crack about Xavier in their rap battle last week. He called them a bunch of pussies. He said, after I beat the shit out of you, I'll buy you all a drink. From the looks of things, that may be part of the problem here. A drink sounds like the last thing this guy needs. And for the record, I don't doubt that he would beat the shit out of Triple H in a real fight. Del Rio's not somebody I would want to be messing around with. But that's not the point. This is the guy that Jeff Jarrett has picked to be his champion to represent his company. If you're a Global Force Wrestling fan, I don't know how you could be behind this. I don't know how you could support this. This is embarrassing. It's just really sad. Ring of Honor announced this week that they are leaving Comet TV for Charge. That's the name of it. Charge! With an exclamation point at the end. I guess like at baseball games when they play the whole... They play... Let me see if I can bring it up here. They play... Charge! I just had to do that. That's the new network, I guess, that Ring of Honor is now on. Starting tonight, they're going to have back-to-back episodes at 10 p.m., so they're leaving one network that nobody knows about for another network that nobody knows about. Apparently, this network only launched 4 months ago. It looks like they have a live stream on their website for those who don't have the channel in their area, which is probably most of you listening. So you might be able to watch Ring of Honor that way, or you can still watch the show on your local Sinclair affiliate, or if you have the Fight app, I would encourage everybody to download the Fight TV app. You can watch Ring of Honor that way. Lucha Underground, Left for Dead. That was the name of this episode. By the way, thank you to the many, many, many of you who emailed me that Vibora on the show is played by Austin Mattelson, the former Judas Devlin in NXT, which I had forgotten about. I made the comment, you know, last week. I said, as big as this guy is, as physically big as this guy is, WWE will, I'm sure, be knocking on his door soon, not realizing that he had already signed with WWE many years ago, and then they cut him. He suffered like a spinal injury, and later on he accused Bill DeMont of doing some things and bullying and all that, and ultimately it led to DeMont resigning from the company, so I guess we won't be seeing him in WWE anytime soon. So as the title of this episode suggests, Left for Dead, or at least that's the title of the episode as it's listed in iTunes when I bought it. The show opened with a shot of Dante Fox on a casual run through Boyle Heights when he starts suffering flashbacks from the war. And they show him being held captive by the Taliban in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, outside, there's an American soldier who I guess is supposed to be kill shot. He's shooting a bunch of terrorists in the head, trying to rescue his friend. Dante screams for help. No help ever comes. The other terrorists are in the room with him, telling him that your friend ran away and left you for dead. And as they're about to chop off his head, really, they were about to decapitate him with a giant sword, a bunch of American soldiers storm in and kill the bad guys, and they pull the bag off Dante's head. America. Fuck yeah. Back in real time, he looks up, and he sees Killshot on the roof of the temple here in Boyle Heights. And so, anyway, that's the whole opening sequence. It just, you know, they want to remind you, because again, these guys are not on the show every week. It's very much, it reminds me of the way Superstars and Wrestling Challenge and the shows were back in the day, where you only had an hour, and you didn't have everybody on the show every single week. You didn't feel like you had to cram everybody in there. So you could have, let's say, two guys on the show one week, but not even show up for another 2 or 3 weeks. So sometimes you got to remind people of what the issue is between them. But I will say, when this was over, Killshot came across to me as, a real asshole. This made Dante into a babyface to me, you know. And I'm sure we're going to find out there's some backstory to why Killshot didn't save him and didn't rescue him. It's probably all some big misunderstanding. But he came off, Dante did, as a real sympathetic figure here. Speaking of Killshot, I guess I should mention this here. He just won the CZW title last night, so congrats to him. But also, PW Insider is reporting that the word going around backstage at the CZW show was that Leo Rush has been offered an NXT deal, and he is on his way soon to the Performance Center. And Leo Rush, he's a talented guy, obviously, very young. He's only about 21, 22. But he was at the PWG show the other night, and he posted this great photo on Twitter from the PWG show at ringside of him with Danielle Fischel. Is it Fischel or Fischel? However you pronounce it. She played Topanga on Boy Meets World back in the day. Apparently, she's a big wrestling fan. She follows a bunch of these guys on Twitter. It's a lot of indie guys, too. She follows a lot of them on Twitter. And she bought the last shirt that Leo Rush had brought with him to sell. So he tweeted, he goes, "Hey, it's one of those nights when Topanga buys your last shirt." And they took a picture together. And I thought that was really cool. I had a huge crush on her when I was a kid. She still looks great. But I used to have a big crush on her back in the day. Her and the older sister from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. The hell was her name? What was her name? I forgot. Who cares? Point is, Topanga is a wrestling fan. Topanga is a PWG fan. That's pretty cool. Anyway, Lucha Underground this week was all about wrapping up the first round of the Cueto Cup. We had PJ Black against Sexy Star, and early in the match, PJ did a move. It was the one where you grab the person's arm, and you lift them into the air. George the Animal Steel used to do that move, although he used to hook the arm behind you first, and then he would do it. But Matt Stryker on commentary just goes, "Shades of Jim Breaks." Now, Jim Breaks was a big name in the UK back in the day. How do I know this? How did I become such a big UK expert? I'm not. I know this because just this week, he was arrested on suspicion of killing his ex-girlfriend. And so, assuming this commentary was taped, you know, probably many weeks ago, that's eerie as all hell for Matt Stryker to name drop this guy the same week he gets arrested for murder. Match was almost all Sexy Star. Actually, I thought it was a pretty good little match. It was all action from Sexy, mostly. Taya ran out to distract the referee, passed a pair of brass knucks to PJ. He took a swing. He missed. Sexy picked up the knucks and used them. She knocked out PJ with them, but the referee saw it and disqualified her. So then she knocked the referee out with the brass knucks. That was cool. That was cool. I'm not used to seeing that, since all the guys in WWE and NXT have all been pussified. They're all deathly afraid to do anything to the referee. Hell, I just played Royal Rumble, the old WWF Royal Rumble game for my last Sound Off Gamer Retro, and I spent half the match trying to hit the referee. It's fun. Son of Havoc against Son of Madness in another first round match. I have no idea who Son of Madness is. I've tried to figure it out. If somebody knows, let me know. I've searched high and low. I can find nothing on this man's identity. He is, of course, billed from the open road. He's dressed up to look just like Son of Havoc. And Vampiro is such a smart man. He seems to have extrapolated an awful lot from nothing. He told us that clearly Son of Madness is from the same biker gang as Son of Havoc and has come to collect his jacket, his vest. Reminds me of the Aces and Eights from that awful period of TNA when each of the members would have their own cut. Remember that? They had their cut. That was their vest. So Vampiro figured all of this out on his own. I guess we just have to go with that as the story here. Naturally, this was Son of Madness's debut, which means he lost, because that's a Lucha Underground tradition, apparently. You lose in your debut. Havoc went for the Shooting Star Press. Madness dodged it. Havoc landed on his feet, and he was then immediately rolled up for the pin, but he kicked out. Havoc countered with a schoolboy of his own, and he got the pin. And after the match, Son of Madness laid him out with a... I think he kicked him in the face. And then he stole his vest. See? So Vampiro was right. It's almost like all of that was scripted for him, and it's a television show. Who knew? You know what, though? I have to say, you know, Son of Havoc, he's a good wrestler and all. He gave the sound off a shout-out once. I played the audio. But I miss the trio of Havoc, Angelico, and Ivelisse. I wish they would put them back together. I mean, I get that they're... It's like, it's either Angelico is hurt or Ivelisse is hurt. Like, for these guys are forever injured. Son of Havoc... Actually, Son of Havoc broke his leg in February, but I guess he's all healed up now. But Son of Havoc seemed to be the only one who could stay healthy here. It's always Angelico or Ivelisse who suffer injuries and they're out for months at a time. It's like if it's not one, it's the other. And poor Havoc is the one who gets left out in the cold. So he ends up teaming with Masquerita Sagrada. Now he's feuding with himself. This is like the whole fake Kane angle all over again here. But I miss those three as a team. Prince Puma, now dressed in street clothes against Ricky Mandel in another Cueto Cup match. Mandel was introduced as an interning member of the Worldwide Underground. I wonder how I can get an internship. I wonder if it's a paid internship. I will not take an unpaid internship, but if they're offering paid internships, I might have to get in on that. So Mandel is dressed to look exactly like Johnny Mundo. He is a Mundo clone. Puma immediately kicked him in the face. He gave him a Northern Light suplex into a brainbuster for a near fall. Yes, Ricky Mandel kicked out. And Puma then finished it with a spinning Michinoku driver, so it didn't matter. Vampiro stood up from the announce desk. He flashed the thumbs-up sign at Puma while Puma stared back at him. Vampiro has corrupted this man. So much so that he's now trashing Lucha Underground in other promotions. I blame Vampiro for this. They could actually, you know what they could do? They could take that. They could take that quote. Well, he was Ricochet at the time, I guess, so they can't do that. But, you know, him on the New Japan show last weekend, basically calling Lucha Underground a bunch of pricks. They could work this into the storyline here, man. This is Vampiro. He has corrupted this man's mind. Back in the locker room, Rey Mysterio met up with El Dragon Azteca Jr. Azteca says he wants the first title shot against Rey when Rey beats Johnny Mundo. And when Azteca wins the Cueto Cup. And suddenly Puma walks in, he says, I'm going to win the tournament. And then I want Rey for the title because I want to avenge my loss to Rey Mysterio from last season in Ultima Lucha. Main event on the show was Dante Fox against El Dragon Azteca Jr., the final first round match in this 32-man Cueto Cup tournament. Rey was out there in Azteca's corner. They were having a real good match when Taya showed up again. She went after Rey. Rey booted her in the face. And then the other members of the Worldwide Underground came out, including Johnny Mundo. Mundo gave him an apron powerbomb, and now they're all just stomping the crap out of Rey Mysterio. So Azteca saves him. He does a dive through the ropes. When he gets back in, though, Dante hits the fox catcher, and he gets the pin. And I was surprised. I was surprised because I figured they were setting up for Killshot to cost him the match or distract him. Because it was Dante who was up in the rafters, if you remember, a few weeks ago, and he distracted Killshot. And Killshot, he lost to Jeremiah Crane. He's out of the tournament. So between that and the video package that they opened the show with, I thought they were setting up for Killshot to come out, but he never did. So I guess maybe he'll cost Dante the match later on in the tournament, I would guess. And speaking of Jeremiah Crane, here's how things are shaping up. He will face Taya in the next round of the Cueto Cup. That's next week. We also get Phoenix against Marty the Moth and Mil Muertes against Paul London. Yeah, I'd like to see London pull that rabbit shit on Mil Muertes. Try to threaten him with a carrot and see what happens. Me thinks that that carrot will end up wedged in a very difficult spot. And yes, I just used the phrase, me thinks. I don't know why. It just felt like the right thing to do. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. That will give you the greatest chance to have your question picked for the show. We'll start with Ahmed, all the way from Saudi Arabia. What do you think about WWE bringing in Okada and pairing him up with Paul Heyman? When Ghetto started talking after the match between Okada and Cody at the Long Beach show, I couldn't help but wish that match was in WWE and Paul Heyman was talking about how his client Okada is the best in the world. I do not want Okada in WWE. I cannot say that strongly enough. Maybe I would have felt differently 2 years ago or 3 years ago. But now, no way. I don't want Okada in WWE. I mean, I won't be angry if he ever goes there. But not everybody has to go to WWE. I think that's what we're learning a lot each week that goes by. And someone like Okada, you don't pay him to come over to the States just to wrestle for NXT. If they brought him in, it would ultimately be for the main roster. Okada is the heart and soul of New Japan. He and Tanahashi are the heart and soul of New Japan. That's where he belongs. Now, he's done interviews saying that he would never come to WWE. People say things like that. That doesn't necessarily mean anything, but he is on record as saying that. But I believe him when he says it. I think he wants to be like what John Cena is to WWE as the face of the company. That's kind of what he is to New Japan, and I think he embraces that. I think he wants to be that. He sees the expansion that's going on. He wants to help New Japan grow, and I think that's exactly where he belongs. I don't think he would leave New Japan anyway, and I would not blame WWE for trying to recruit the guy. I mean, he's got to be the number one or two performer in the entire world right now. He's not even 30 years old yet. He'll be 30, I think, at the end of the year. But everything I like about Okada when I watch him, he would not be that in WWE. Him and Ghetto together, they're the perfect combo. Like Brock and Heyman. Brock and Heyman are perfect together. That's what Okada and Ghetto are like in New Japan. Why change that? Even Heyman and Lesnar. Like, I've long since given up on this idea of there being a Heyman guys faction. People still will send me questions, oh, do you think so-and-so would be a good Heyman guy or a good Heyman girl? And now I just say no, because there's not going to be a Heyman guy or a Heyman girl. The only Heyman guy is Brock Lesnar. If they were going to do it, they would have done it years ago. And actually, they tried it with Cesaro, and it was a colossal failure. And we can go into all the reasons why that was, but the fact is, it failed. Heyman and Lesnar should never, ever be split up. They tried that once before. There's no reason to do it again. Okada should stay in New Japan. They're trying to expand into the U.S. now. It looks like Kenny Omega is probably going to be the face of that expansion here in this country. He just, you know, won the U.S. title. But Okada is going to gain more notoriety here in the States also with this expansion. I mean, if he cares about that. And you know, true, if he went to WWE, yeah, he'd be a bigger name, but not everybody wants to go to WWE. WWE is no longer the end-all be-all that it once was for all of these guys. Okada should stay right where he is. Philly from Houston, Texas, do you think GLOW should be acknowledged on Raw or SmackDown? I think WWE could talk about the show and get more eyes on the upcoming Mae Young Classic. What do you think? I'm not really sure what one has to do with the other. I mean, GLOW is a Netflix show. WWE gets nothing out of promoting it. You know, if there were some WWE guys in the show, that would be one thing. But all the cameos are non-WWE people. I mean, think about it. Johnny Mundo's a Lucha Underground guy, right? Tyrus is a GFW guy still, I think. By the way, I forgot to mention this last week when I talked about GLOW. I mentioned all the wrestler cameos and Christopher Daniels. I think I may have also missed Kazarian. Someone said Kazarian was the person that Daniels was wrestling in his one scene in GLOW. I didn't pick up on that, so it's possible Kazarian's in there too. But the main one I forgot was the welfare queen on the show. She was played by Awesome Kong. I had no idea that was Awesome Kong until somebody mentioned it to me, and she was one of the best parts of the show. So I was kind of shocked when they told me that I didn't realize it was her. I also forgot to mention the Brooke Hogan cameo. I recognized her right away when I saw her. She was the one trying to rent the place out to Mark Maron's character towards the end when they were getting ready for their big wrestling show. So yeah, Brooke Hogan worked her way into GLOW somehow as well. Maybe we can get that Hulk Hogan cameo in season two. Andrew from Arkansas, on WCW Monday Nitro, the Cruiserweight division was must watch. For many years, the best part of TNA was the X division. Yet every time WWE has tried to do a light heavyweight or a Cruiserweight division, it has not worked. What could WWE do to save the Cruiserweight division? You know, I don't know if it can be saved. They have their way of doing things. It doesn't work because WWE has their way of doing it, and it doesn't freaking work. And I think a lot of it probably has to do with the fact that they tell guys, you can't do this, you can't do that, you got to tone this down, you got to tone that down. And so now you've got a bunch of guys who are 5'8" and 5'6" and 200 pounds or 180 pounds, whose bread and butter is doing really wild, crazy stuff and flying around, and they get to do a little bit of that, but... You know, a lot of it is, well, you gotta do your rest holds and you gotta do this and slow it down and tone it down and be more like everybody else on the show. But the whole thing is, if they're like everybody else on the show, you know, it doesn't do them any good. It's boring. So there's really not a whole lot to get excited about. And then, of course, they give some of them these stupid storylines that nobody gives a shit about. And there's a lot of reasons we can get into about why the Cruiserweight division hasn't, you know, caught fire the way that some people thought it might. But it's true. I mean, the Cruiserweight division at the beginning in WCW, part of it was a novelty. We had not seen anything like that here in this country on TV, on like national TV. And it was like, holy crap. And think about it. I mean, at their peak, WCW was giving people the Cruiserweights. So if you wanted the Lucha Libre, all action, nonstop, high-paced stuff. You had that with the Cruiserweights, and Rey Mysterio was just unbelievable. Him and Eddie Guerrero. But on the same show, you would have all the big names. So, like, you would open with a Cruiserweight match, but by the end of the hour, you'd have Hulk Hogan or Lex Luger or Sting. Like, they gave you a mix of everything on that show. And it all clicked and came at the right time when wrestling was just that hot. So everything just... The stars aligned. But WCW, when they weren't, you know, messing up and doing all this, you know, making all these dumb decisions, you know, I got to give Bischoff credit because he found the right formula. Let's give people a little bit of everything. WWE doesn't seem to like doing that. WWE has this one thing that they give you, and they don't like to deviate from that. And so the Cruiserweights are suffering because of it. You know, TNA. Like you said, the X division at the beginning was pretty incredible. You know, the action, the matches that you would see, and the talent they had with Samoa Joe and Daniels and AJ and all these people. It was very unique. It was very innovative. And I think they made a big mistake by not building the company more around those guys. And that's when they started to bring in all the ex-WWE guys. And it just, you know, they got away... TNA did early on from what really brought them to the dance. That was their mistake. But WWE just never seems to be able to get it right with this stuff. They had a light heavyweight division, like you said, in the early 2000s. I don't remember a whole lot about it. I mean, do you remember all these great light heavyweight matches that WWE had? Not me. There weren't that many of them. And it didn't last very long. They started a midgets division. That didn't last very long. Like, they try these ideas and it's almost like they give up on them so quickly. I'm shocked the Cruiserweight division has lasted as long as it has. It hasn't even been a full year yet, but, right? I think, was it September of last year when they finally debuted on Raw? You know, we could talk about that. We could talk about putting them on after SmackDown on Tuesdays and getting those dead crowds on 205 Live. There's a lot of mistakes they've made. What can be done to save the Cruiserweight division? I don't know that it can be. I think, you know, some people like it. A lot of people are just very indifferent. I don't know at this point that they could do much to change people's minds. But you can take a lot of those Cruiserweight guys and not just keep them in that division. I just, you know, was talking about this earlier. You can save the people in the division. I don't know if you can actually make the division into what they really want it to be, but the people that are in it are very talented, and they deserve better, and you can save them. But you've got to make changes, and you've got to, you know, you've got to expand beyond just having them wrestle the same people over and over again. Otherwise, you know, you're going to just kill the whole thing. Callum from Madrid, Spain. In WWE, the men's division has had a lot of past stars come back for another match or another run. Names like Goldberg, Sting, Undertaker, which always has its share of supporters and critics. I would like to know how you'd feel on some of the ex-female stars being brought back to help with the division. Of course, the women don't have as many stars as men to pull out of thin air, but why not get Trish Stratus or Lita to guest referee a match, let's say, at SummerSlam? Use her name and star power to help promote a title match or what have you. Well, I mean, they sort of did that with Mickie James, right? They brought back Mickie James in NXT, or Triple H did anyway, and she put over Asuka, and Mickie came back, she got this great response, and she looked like she hadn't missed a beat. It was great. It was this great feel-good story, and then what happened? She went to the main roster, and that was it. It was like, off to Rikers Island with you. And it's like, from the moment Mickie James showed up on that main roster, she's gotten disappointing reaction after disappointing reaction. It's just like, wow. It's amazing to me. And I mean, I know the NXT audience is different in a lot of ways from the mainstream audience, but she was a big name. You know, for many years, she was a big, you know, she was one of the biggest female stars in that company. And it's like, most weeks she comes out, her music plays, and it's just crickets. But they've done that by bringing her back, even though she's not done anything of any note since then. You know, someone like Lita, they are using, they're just not using her in the ring. Lita's going to be doing commentary for the Mae Young Classic with Jim Ross, and I would imagine they'll have her putting some of the newer women over. That'll be her way of kind of putting them over. I just saw earlier that Medusa is apparently going to be involved in some way in the Mae Young Classic. She may not be wrestling. Apparently she'll be helping in some other role, maybe a trainer, maybe they'll have her referee a match. I don't know, but she'll be involved. That's cool. What about, you know, I think of someone like Victoria, right? Victoria, and I'm not sure why they haven't brought her back in some way to help out. She hasn't been in TNA for a while. She tried to get backstage at SmackDown a few weeks ago, and they wouldn't let her backstage. Now, I don't know if it was a misunderstanding or if she's actually banned from the backstage area because there's something she said or there's something she did. I have no idea, but I mean, that was incredible to me when she went online and she was like, oh, it would have been nice to see all my old friends backstage. It's too bad I wasn't allowed back there. I'm like, wasn't allowed back there? Look at some of the people they let backstage. David Benoit, for Christ's sake. They let him backstage whenever they come to, like, Edmonton. Some of the celebrity goofballs they allow in the back, I guess because they're celebrities, they let them backstage. Okada was backstage. He's been backstage a few times at WWE shows. But yet they won't let Victoria backstage. I don't understand that, but she's a vet, right? She's a veteran, not a veterinarian. They could, although that would be a nice side gig for her. But they could do something with her if they wanted to. I think it would be cool to see them bring back Trish. And Trish has said she's open to it in the past. They could bring back Trish for one more match, maybe against like a Charlotte or a Sasha, like a big women's match at WrestleMania. I think that would be fine, right? So long as they don't overdo it. But like you said, they have a much smaller pool of older female stars to pull from than the men. You know, look at all the old guys they've brought back over the years. They don't really have as many women to do that with. I don't see them bringing back Ivory, for example. Not that Ivory was that big of a star when she was there. Or like Deborah or Sable or someone like that. I don't know that Sable would want to come back. I'd be afraid to bring Sable back because the slightest thing goes wrong, you know who you're going to have to deal with. I think that'd be a bad idea. So someone like Victoria or Trish, yeah, I think that would be fine. I think that would be cool. Brandon from Sevierville, Tennessee. When WCW folded, why did Lex Luger not have another run in WWE? Was his involvement in Miss Elizabeth's death held against him, or was it simply because of him jumping to WCW without notice several years before, leaving a bad taste in the company's mouth? Well, you know, you mentioned the Elizabeth thing. They basically, on one of their shows, they accused him of basically murdering her and being responsible for her death. So yeah, I'd say they were on pretty bad terms after that. But he was on their blacklist way before Elizabeth died. I mean, that was the one that sealed his fate with the company, that they weren't going to touch him after that. It felt like they were piling on, you know, but it wasn't just the perception that he was responsible for her death. Remember, he also got busted for a shitload of steroids when that whole thing went down. He was radioactive at that point. Then he had all of his health issues, so there was no way they were going to do anything with him. But Luger was one of the names that Vince sort of pitched to the crowd on Raw in that promo the night of the Raw Nitro simulcast, I think. You know, it's like, how would you like to see Buff Bagwell? And he would wait for the crowd to react. What about Sting? What about Lex Luger? I think Luger was one of the names, and I don't think it was well received. And you could kind of tell that he was on Vince's shit list, that Vince wasn't going to bring him back anyway. I think, to answer your question, I think it has everything to do with the way he left in 95. They thought they had a deal. They thought they had a verbal agreement and a commitment from him to stay. And then he literally showed up on the very first Nitro without any warning. That's their side of the story. They weren't really using Luger in any kind of prominent role at the time. He'd been tagging with the British Bulldog. They were doing the Allied Power stuff for a while. He was in the mid-card. Now, he did do a run-in in the SummerSlam main event that year. It was Diesel against Mabel. I try to block that out of my mind as much as I can. But that was the main event of SummerSlam, and he did a run-in. Diesel was getting beaten down by Men on a Mission, and Luger ran in to try to save him, I guess. People were, like, cheering, and he came in, and as soon as, I'll never forget it, as soon as he got into the ring, because Diesel's trying to fight these guys off, as soon as Luger gets in the ring, Diesel goes after him. Now, I don't remember if there was something going on TV at the time, maybe I'm forgetting, but why the hell would Diesel go after him when he's coming in to try to save him? But Diesel makes a beeline for Luger, and he, like, clotheslined him out of the ring. It's like, they actually sort of buried him there, if you think about it. He looked like a moron. But I think back to, you know, another big WCW name that they brought in years earlier, Ric Flair. And Vince had respect for Ric that he didn't have for anybody else. He had some sort of gentleman's agreement with Flair, where Flair was ever dropped down the card into more of like a mid-card or an undercard role, he would be free if he wanted to go back to WCW. And to Vince's credit, Vince let him go. Because I'm sure Flair, I don't think Flair's contract was up. He let Flair leave early and go back to WCW, which is incredible that he would let something like that happen. He obviously had a lot of respect for Rick. Rick, for the most part, was very protected during that run. He came in, he won the Rumble, he was the champion. I know he didn't hold it for very long, but if you look at Ric Flair's first year, year and a half in WWE, and you look at other guys they brought in from, like, WCW and the NWA, and they put Dusty in the polka dots, and, you know, Flair got off easy. Flair was actually treated pretty well. Not the case with Luger. Here, obviously, he didn't have the same respect for Luger that he had for Flair. You know, and clearly because they never thought to bring back Luger. Dire Mood, I hope I pronounced that right, from Dublin, Ireland. I was watching one of Bruce Pritchard's shoot interviews where he talks about the Rockers, and the original plan for Marty Jannetty was to go heel, leaving out Marty's personal problems in 1992. If he had stuck around, do you think this would have been a good idea, and how would it have affected Sean's early singles run? I think it would have been a terrible idea. I just don't think Marty could have carried the load as the heel. And I think it would have killed Sean's early singles run. I think long-term he would have been okay. But I don't think he would have had that run that he did. I'll tell you whose life probably would have ended up very different had it gone down that way. Kevin Nash. Sean was the one who noticed Nash in WCW. He pitched for him to come into the company and come in as his bodyguard. Now, Jannetty wasn't bringing in Kevin Nash. So if their original idea happens, if what Pritchard said is true, there's no Diesel. Hell, stretch it out even more. There may be no NWO. It's amazing sometimes when you stop and think about a change here, a little tweak there, or this idea was supposed to happen, but this guy got hurt, and so it ended up working out this way. Like, how different history might have worked out. Finn in Dublin, Ireland. Another one from Dublin. I've noticed I've got a few listeners there from Dublin. I was wondering if you knew what WWE had planned for Brock Lesnar after WrestleMania 20, before he told him he wanted to go play football. If Brock stays, I don't see JBL ever becoming a main eventer, and maybe Randy Orton doesn't win the world title at SummerSlam. What were WWE's plans for Brock? Well, we know he would have won at WrestleMania 20, because Goldberg was on his way out. Once Brock decided that he was leaving, they just decided to put the babyface over. So, we know that. Beyond that, it's all just speculation. But, I would think there's a very good chance the long-term plan, if there was one, or even if there wasn't an actual long-term plan, what would have ended up happening, it would have been Brock Lesnar and John Cena at WrestleMania 21. That would have been the WWE title match. You would have had Triple H against Batista. That would have been for the World Heavyweight title. Once their plans for Orton and Triple H changed when Batista caught fire, so I don't think that would have been affected by it. I do think JBL was the beneficiary of Lesnar leaving. They needed a top heel very fast, and so he was their answer. But I think it would have been Cena-Lesnar the following year. As far as like in the more immediate plans for Brock after WrestleMania 20, I don't know. I mean, I just come back. Remember, there were internet rumors about Undertaker, who had just come back with the Dead Man gimmick, maybe doing Lesnar and Undertaker coming out of WrestleMania 20. Those were some rumors that I remember being on like some of the internet sites at the time. I can see that if only because, look at what they did with Undertaker after he came back as the Dead Man, right? He beat Kane at WrestleMania, and then what did he do? I think there was like a random pay-per-view match where he beat Booker T, and then the next month, he's in the main event of a pay-per-view wrestling in a friggin' handicap match against the Dudley Boys. So when you really stop and think about it, it almost seems like they probably had a better plan for him, and then it fell through, and like this was the backup plan. I would hope so. I mean, unless their plan all along was to put him in a friggin' pay-per-view handicap match against Bubba Ray and D-Von. So yeah, maybe it was going to be Undertaker and Brock for a few pay-per-views coming out of that show. It's at least believable that that could have been the plan, but it's just speculation. But the Cena-Lesnar thing, though, I'm pretty confident in saying that. Ivan from El Paso. Out of all of the current world titles, counting WWE, ROH, IWGP, and Global Force, how would you rank them in terms of prestige? I would go IWGP, WWE, ROH, and Global Force dead last in that order. In part because their champion can't shut up about WWE, which only ups the prestige of WWE. So that's how I would rank them. Ben from Milwaukee, with the new Bucks Arena being built and completed in 2018, could you see the city of Milwaukee getting a SummerSlam in the next few years? No. I mean, probably not SummerSlam. They seem to like either New York or LA, so I don't see them trading New York or LA for Milwaukee. They love doing the whole week here, like in New York, and they do back-to-back-to-back events at the Barclays Center. Like, I just don't see them doing that there. But there's no reason not to do another show from Milwaukee, like a Survivor Series or a Money in the Bank. I mean, I looked it up. I didn't realize they were working on a new arena. It fits about, or it will fit about 17,000, which is about normal size. I'm sure they'll run it, but just not for a SummerSlam. Andrew from Liverpool, England. I am a professional actor, but before I became an actor, I was training to be a pro wrestler. I was blessed to learn from some of the best the UK has to offer, and I was even able to get some experience under my belt. However, due to certain complications, I could no longer continue. My question to you is, have you ever trained or considered the idea of training to become a professional wrestler? And if so, what stopped you? What stopped me was I was smart enough not to do it in the first place. That's what stopped me. No, I have not. I've thought about, like, in the like many years ago, I was thinking, like, oh, like an announcer or something like that. I've thought about that, but not a wrestler. to be a wrestler, here's the thing. To be a wrestler, you need to be, I think, a little bit crazy. And I mean that in the most respectful way. And B, and this is probably more important, you need to be blessed with certain physical attributes. And I was smart enough to realize that I had neither of those things. And so the thought never seriously crossed my mind. Look, I wouldn't mind doing something physical. That's like a one-time thing. I think that could be fun. Like, you know, take a bump or something. I feel like if there's one thing I could probably do very well, it's making someone else look good. But actually training to be a wrestler, that was just never going to happen. And believe me, you don't want to see that. Nobody wants to see that. I never sent in a tough enough video or any of that nonsense because it's just, I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting their time. You know, some people are, look, not, there aren't a lot of people who are made to be a pro wrestler. I mean, you think about, there's a lot of people who try, but in like the grand scheme of things, if you think about people who try out to be like baseball players and football players and do other things, I'm sure the number is like tiny. You know, it's like almost such a niche thing, and there's a very select few who can actually do what those guys do. It's not easy. You may watch it on TV and think, oh, I can do that. Very few people can do that. It's a hard business, and I think you have to have a certain respect for it to realize that, and I realized that very early on. So I like watching it, or being part of it in some way. Yeah, that'd be neat, but to actually be in the ring and be doing that? Yeah, no, that was never going to happen. And we'll do one more here. This is a non-wrestling buy or sell from Lee in Hull, England. Buy or sell on the best twist, or the better twist, at the end of a film. Saw or The Usual Suspects? That's a tough one for me. I am actually going to buy on The Usual Suspects because that's just a classic. I mean, how can I vote against that? The thing is, though, when I saw Saw for the first time, I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it at home on cable, and I didn't know anything about it. I just went into it cold, and I don't know how many people actually figured it out. I'm sure a lot of you guys probably did. The twist at the end, I won't spoil it, but there's a twist at the end. When it happened, I didn't see it coming, and so I verbally was like, holy shit, as I saw it playing itself out. Like, it genuinely surprised me. The Usual Suspects, I didn't, like, react out loud like that, but it was also a nice twist. It was a really good twist at the end, and it was actually a really good movie, and I will probably buy on that one. I think that one was probably the better twist at the end. I just got done talking, I was on the last podcast, I think, about Primal Fear. Primal Fear is another one. If you're looking for movies with a good twist, Primal Fear is another great one. There's another Kevin Spacey movie. Oh, Seven. I only saw Seven for the first time last year, if you can believe that. That movie's like 20-something years old. And that was, wow. Talk about a dark ending to that movie. Holy shit. That was another good one. That was another Kevin Spacey movie. But yeah, The Usual Suspects or Saw. I know Saw is not for everybody. Not everybody likes movies like that. But I have to say, I actually thought, all things considered, forget the gore and everything for a second, like the story and the plot and the twist and everything else, I thought the original, the first one, the first Saw movie was very well done. And again, the twist, they got me. But if you're looking for an awesome movie overall with a nice twist at the end, you got to go with The Usual Suspects. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can always email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. If you have questions about pretty much anything, as you can tell, they don't always have to be wrestling related. You can email me there. Don't forget, I have a brand new Sound Off Gamer Retro up from last week. I play Royal Rumble for SNES. Got a brand new layout for the videos and everything. Would love your feedback. So go on the YouTube channel and check it out. I'm going to be doing another one of those gamers very soon. I'm sticking to the retro theme for now. I'm enjoying playing some of the older games. At some point, I'm sure I'll branch out into something new. But definitely go ahead and check that out. Tonight is Great Balls of Fire. I will be doing a post-show review on YouTube. It will be a YouTube exclusive. And if you want to download the audio, you'll have to go to YouTube anyway because the link will be in the video description. But that will be going up late tonight, early tomorrow morning. After the pay-per-view, I'll have my thoughts on Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe. So head on over to YouTube, hit the subscribe button, and check out my review there. And I will be back with a brand new podcast, episode 504, next Sunday. So until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy balls tonight. And I never thought I would end a show that way, but I just did. And we'll see you back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters sound off.